The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here in a comfortable chair, along with Sam Monson over there in a similarly comfortable chair.
Hey, Steve.
How's it going?
Doing good. How about you?
Great. Just mixing it up. Everything's falling off the desk. It's going well. The beauty of live YouTubing right now, fellas.
The equipment is collapsing.
It is.
Don't worry.
Just
I got
kinda,
it.
Just getting familiar with the new set. Welcome to the new set for the PFF NFL podcast. Here we are.
Yeah.
How's it feel, man?
It feels a little uncomfortable, I think.
We're just getting used to it.
Yeah. Look, change is never comfortable. Change is supposed to put you out of your comfort zone, and that's certainly what this change has done.
Just trying to figure out where to, like, you know, people just don't know, like, where to put their hands when they're taking
right.
a picture. I don't know where to put anything.
Yes.
My laptop.
Also, so what's really interesting about this particular new setup is that we're now on, like, a platform here. So this, you know, we're raised. So there's, like, some...
Yeah.
What do you guys call them? Cinder blocks? Breeze? We call them breeze blocks.
Cinder blocks. Yeah,
cinder blocks.
Yeah,
so there's blocks. There's some cinder blocks in the bottom, which like raises up some pallet thing that we're sitting on. And you have about an inch at the back of your chair before you go.
Yeah, if I lean back, if I fall asleep, we're done.
Well, I'm just saying, if the chair moves like an inch backwards, right, you are pitching off the back of this thing. You're dead. But the more concerning thing is that you'll probably break the big screen behind us
Parker.
As well.
Well, this is why we record this stuff, because you never know when you're going to catch that. So
right, you got to have camera rolling at all times for the moment that you pitch over.
You guys might hear me breathing more.
Destroy
cough
things.
Buttons.
Yeah, it's now an endeavor to reach the cough button.
That's but here we go. We're reviewing week 15.
Yeah.
Of NFL action from the new PFF NFL podcast set. You ready to get into it?
Yes, Steve.
All right, let's start with a little Thursday night review. New York Jets at the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens handle the Jets as expected, 42-21. Lamar throws another 5 touchdowns against no interceptions. Another just smooth, dominant offensive performance for the Ravens.
It really was. This is another game where defenses just don't know. It's like we said, right? What is the game plan to stop Lamar? This probably was the game plan, right? Which is kind of try and bottle him up as much as you can in terms of running, keep him in the pocket, make him win as a passer. The problem is he can. Greg Williams threw pretty much everything at him in terms of disguises, in terms of different looks, in terms of blitz, no blitz. Everything he threw at him, Lamar had a pretty comfortable answer to it. And at that point, I don't know what you do.
Yeah, the Ravens just... they have answers. I think that's the best way to put it. They have answers in the run game. I mean, it's how their whole run game is predicated. It's, you know, you're going to go after the running back. Lamar's going to keep it. You're going to, you know, stop Lamar. And we're going to hand it off. So
Ken's now in here trying to make changes to our ad-libbed
tech. This is just how we do it here. This is how we do it. How's the sound going?
Don't worry about keeping yourself out of the shot, Ken. Just dive straight in there and fix whatever we did.
Part of the beauty of what we do here is, look at the ticker is doing a nice job of...
Ticker does a pretty good job of covering up your giant knees.
This is a good time to discuss...
Always an issue with the podcast setting.
The Thursday night game was great and all that stuff, but I did not get to see it live.
No?
I was busy at the College Football Awards.
You were. We didn't get that on the big screen, did we, Ken? Steve's photo bombing of Herschel Walker.
All right. So for the next podcast, if I show you the actual broadcast, I was on TV quite a bit. I was in the shot quite a bit. Chris Fowler's over there. I was in the fifth row. And then
Brian was sitting in front of you. How did he get the fourth row?
So as uncomfortable as this is,
yeah.
Picture this. There are seats that are about this wide,
uh-huh.
and they're tight as tight as can be.
Yeah.
So you've got your ticket and you go in and it's like, all right, row five, seat six, whatever. Our row is completely full. We're the last two
mm-hmm.
to sit down. When we sat down, you got about half of a chair to sit in. All right. I was on
the third chair
next to me. It was bad. So I had to sit for the first like quarter of the show. I was just sitting like this for fear of like sitting on someone. I mean, it was just and it wasn't just because of me. I mean, they were packing in. Right.
Yeah.
And then in front, there was two open seats. So Brian finally made the move and he moved up. And then I got a little bit of leg room and all that stuff. So Brian was row four. I was row five. But I did a good job of finding the camera. But there's a great snapshot. I'm glad you put it on Twitter, though, just to prove. And I knew where the camera was. Herschel Walker, Brian, and then Creepy Steve, like right over Herschel.
Herschel Walker is a full like zoom shot of Herschel. He's, you know, the one they cut to the guy in the crowd, and it's like, here's Herschel Walker, blah, blah, blah. So it's like full face of Herschel, right? And then like five rows back over his shoulder is Steve just looking at the camera.
You got to notice the other time that I made it onto the show, because the previous night we go to the aquarium. It's like a welcome dinner for all the players.
Uh-huh.
And during the main show, they're like, hey, last night there was a welcome at the aquarium. And it's just all this B-roll. And so there's a point where Jalen Hurts is standing and then he just, you know, walks. And there's just a picture of me just like stretching like randomly like in the middle of the room. It looks like I knew where the camera was and found it, but it was all coincidental. So we can make a fun little montage of the times that Steve found the red light.
Yes, Steve photobombing the College Football Awards.
I also ran into a huge PFF fan.
Oh yeah?
It was almost embarrassing that this guy recognized me right away and was like, man, huge fan of your work.
Who's that then?
Chase Young.
So you sent
Ohio State's Chase Young.
I do. You sent me a picture of you and Chase Young stood next to each other.
Yeah.
It's like those photos, you know, where you see like Yao Ming stood next to J.J. Watt and makes him look like a child.
Yeah.
Like my takeaway from that picture is Chase Young is tiny. He's not, obviously.
He's a monster.
Right. It's just that you're freaky.
I mean, he's like 6'5 with the same weight as me.
Right. And yet you make him look like a small child.
Yeah. Yeah, so Chase and I were sitting together at the dinner, and he's a big PFF fan. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun. We'll try to get the podcast listeners are dying to see. Still trying to figure out how to
see. Yeah, we're going to need – where are we going to throw all this stuff? We need to put it somewhere accessible.
We can make like a little thread. I really think there's like a video montage. If we go back through the show, there might be a video montage to be made of Steve finding the camera on this thing. So we'll figure it out.
Let's also throw it all on Twitter at PFF_podcasts.
Yeah,
so
the podcast.
Can find it all.
All right. So enough of that sidebar. We had a lot of fun, though, at the College Football Awards.
Well, you
special
did.
Thanks.
I was here.
Well, Brian and I did.
Oh, okay.
Maxwell Award. We were special guests of the Maxwell Award because we help out with their selection process. Anyway, so back to the Ravens' dominance. Again, good offense in today's NFL has answers for everything. I've said balance on offense previously. I used to, you know, it's passing short, passing intermediate, passing deep, and being able to run the ball. In the Ravens' case, it's being able to run the ball with your backs, running the ball with your quarterback, and then having a quarterback that can pick you apart, you know, through the air. And you know, Lamar's hitting far more throws. He's in the top 10 at just avoiding uncatchable passes this year after being one of the worst. And that jump continues to make the Ravens so dangerous.
Yeah. Like I say, they've reached the point where I don't know what the game plan is to stop Lamar. And as if that wasn't bad enough, their defense is pretty nasty as well. So Baltimore's rolling. You know, Jets weren't.
They were not.
That was Thursday Night Football.
All right, let's go through yesterday's slate. New England Patriots 34, Bengals 13. And, you know, the Patriots score 34. Of course, 7 comes on a pick 6. Other points coming through, other turnovers. We're still popping here just a little bit in and out. It's that red. It's the red.
It's definitely the red kid.
Anyway, the Patriots offense still remains a massive concern.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny. So this game, like you say, the scoreline kind of looks pretty conclusive. But this was, what, 13-10 at the half?
Right.
And the whole game swung in like a couple of minute stretch where, you know, they scored the pick six. It ended up looking a lot worse than it, I think it actually was. I think the same concerns are there for the Patriots. Like, the offense did not look good. The receivers didn't get open still. I'm not sure why the Bengals were so intent on challenging Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, it didn't work very well.
So they threw the ball Gilmore's way six times, and Gilmore caught as many of them as the intended receiver did.
Right.
And the one touchdown scored when targeting Gilmore was him.
Right.
The pick six, right?
Yep.
That seems questionable. Now, I know, the Patriots had some advanced scouting on the Bengals, but I'm not sure this was the answer to that.
Did they make the Bengals throw the ball Gilmore's way? I wonder if they induced that. Also, J.C. Jackson had two interceptions. He's just got incredible numbers throughout his career. We'll have to get the update. As of a few weeks back, remember, he had like a zero passer rating when targeting him at 20-plus yards. He had another couple interceptions yesterday. So Gilmore and Jackson combined for the four picks, a couple other pass breakups between the two of them, dominant on the defensive side of the ball. The story in New England is going to continue to be that offense. It really is just different people screwing up all the time. Brady had accurate throws that were dropped. He had open receivers that were missed. And then, it just, completions just feel like they're hard to come by in New England, and it's for various reasons. There's a ton of throwaways. There's pass breakups. There's all these different things going on. Then there's pressure, tight window throws, whatever it is. The passing offense has to figure something out if they're going to go on a run, unless they're just trusting the defense to dominate, which is going to be tough against good offenses in the playoffs.
This game was kind of interesting because it felt like early on they had a few different ways of manufacturing some plays for these guys that don't get open, right? And then it was like, all right, now we've only had a chance to install these half dozen, and now we've run out of them, now you just have to get open again.
They've done a good job in recent weeks of realizing N'Keal Harry's good with the ball in his hands. They had a couple end arounds. He averaged over 10 yards a pop on those. They did a good job putting him in space, he had two catches. One was against zone.
Yeah.
One was scramble drill for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So again, that's a number three.
Had another, couple of targets, one of which was blanketed and broken up.
Yeah. But I mean, that's like a number three. Well, he did have a nice catch that was negated though. They ran through the whole play and ended up being a pre-snap penalty on Edelman. He did get a deep ball. The best pass Brady threw was negated on the deep ball to him. So, again, just uneven performance from New England offensively.
Watching him run routes against William Jackson was just it felt like where you see sometimes a completely lopsided matchup and you just feel bad for one side. This was kind of that.
That was N'Keal.
Yeah, it was like he's running routes, he's trying to get open, he's doing everything he can, and William is just bolted to his hip the entire way, like it's not a problem.
Yeah. Just not great.
No, and look, so I was having a discussion on Twitter sometime yesterday during the games with, I don't even remember how to pronounce this guy's name, but Dave Damachek, the NFL Network guy.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Big Steelers guy.
Right. And he was talking about how this Brady, woe is Brady narrative is a bit overdone, right? And I ended up sort of summing it up. It's a lot like the Cleveland Browns offense, only they're winning, right?
Yeah.
There are so many problems, and all of them impact the other ones, so that the sum of the issues is greater than the issues themselves. Brady is definitely not what he was, right? So yep. Brady needs a little more help than he has before. The receivers don't get separation. The receivers are the slowest group of receivers in the NFL. The only guy that runs under a 4.5 or ran under a 4.5 is Philip Dorsett, who's just not great, right?
Right.
So they're slow. They don't get open. Brady doesn't trust them. He's holding the ball longer, which causes the offensive line to struggle more, which causes Brady to struggle more, and the whole thing just cycles, right? It's kind of like this Cleveland offense, except the Patriots are well run and therefore good and still winning.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you just look at the receiving core, you've got it's a bunch of guys who have been pretty good number threes. Muhammad Sanu was a fantastic compliment with the Cincinnati Bengals behind A.J. Green and Marvin Jones, and in Atlanta behind, say, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley earlier this year and in last year, right? So a nice number three. N'Keal Harry feels like if he's your third option and he's a bit of a gimmick player and you're going to throw some back shoulders every now and again and you're going to throw him some screens, okay, that's fine. That's another number three. Philip Dorsett's had a lot of success as a number three. When you have Gronk on the field, when you have Edelman on the field, Dorsett runs a couple deep outs, gets open, you know, becomes a red zone threat, and he gets behind the defense every now and again. It's a whole bunch of guys who are pretty nice, complementary players, and then Julian Edelman, who, of course, has been extremely consistent for Brady through the years, but he was playing all banged up yesterday and everything, so it just leads to ugly offense. The Patriots did run the ball better. They broke free on a couple big runs, and that's what happened late last year, too. I don't think that's not moving the needle, though. I mean, if they're passing for 130 yards a game, I don't think they're doing much in the playoffs.
Well, it's now basically, I mean, that would need to be their game plan for this offense to actually be good the way people expect it to. Like, I mean, it's become an issue that there doesn't appear to be an obvious fix to. Like, you can only scheme guys open so much. And, you know, it sounds like I'm constantly hating on Harry because I just point out the fact that the guy can't separate. I think he does a lot of things well, but you can't have a bunch of people like that. The problem is all of them are like that.
Right.
The only guy that can actually separate is Julian Edelman, who teams are just taking away and saying, right, you're not going to pass through Edelman all day. You're going to have to go somewhere else. And right now they can't. Nobody else can get open. So you might be able to scheme N'Keal Harry some plays, you know, the end arounds, the jet motions, all that kind of thing. You might be able to get him open a few times, but you can't do that for everybody. Like, the entire offense can't be manufacturing free and cheap plays for all of your receivers. At some point, those guys actually need to be winning.
Yeah, and this should have been a game because the Bengals weren't playing a ton of man coverage. They mixed it up, but they're, you know, if you give Brady zones to pick apart and receivers who don't need to separate a ton, they should be able to have more success. And they still, again, when guys are open, he's missing. When he's hitting guys, a lot of things are just going wrong still for this New England passing attack.
Joe Mixon was a beast in this game.
He was. He ran the ball really well.
118 yards after contact.
Really good for my Dynasty Expert League. Mm. Joe Mixon helping. I just got to hand it to my fantasy guys. They took the bye week in stride. We rested them up last week. And, you know, barring a miracle from Alvin Kamara, you know, we're going to go to the finals again for the third year in a row.
I can't tell you how happy I am.
I mean, people need to know this. Is Jeff Radcliffe listening? Why am I not writing Dynasty articles on PFF.com?
It's a question that befuddles PFF people to this day.
Number one, draft well. Number two, earn a bye. Dominate the regular season so you earn a bye. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then get players that step up in playoff time.
Yeah.
Weeks 15, 16, get guys that step up. That's how you win. That's my strategy.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, Joe Mixon, he had a really nice game. Andy Dalton did not have a good game. He just kept throwing interceptions.
A lot of them, yeah.
Some forces, and yeah, that's it. Bengals remain poor.
Bad.
Offensively.
But now primed to get Joe Burrow, number one overall.
Oh, yeah, they're in good shape. They're in good shape for Burrow. And Burrow wins the Heisman. I mean, he really is on his way to maybe the most decorated season of all time for a college quarterback.
Mm. The only stat of any interest for me when it came to the Heisman thing was that apparently this is like the first time an LSU player's won it since 1959 or something.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, really good.
It feels like they've had some good players down the years.
They have. They have. Leonard Fournette was in the mix until he ran into Alabama.
No Heisman for Jamarcus?
Jamarcus
who
didn't
won it that year?
No. In 2006, Troy Smith.
Ah, which is apparently that was the previous most one-sided Heisman vote ever till this one.
Yeah, and Smith had like a really good season for a good Ohio State team, and then, you know, there weren't many other good options. All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay Bucks 38, the Lions 17. Jameis did it again, man.
Yeah, your prediction didn't come true.
What was my prediction?
You said that Jameis would not throw any interceptions in the dome. And almost the first thing he did was throw an interception.
I don't remember. I don't remember my prediction. What he did do, though, was go 23 of 28 for 375 in a clean pocket. 23 of 28 for 375 and three touchdowns. That's 13.4 yards per attempt, Sam.
I thought this. So this was one of those games that shows how ridiculously hard it is to break that single game passing record, which I constantly keep thinking is going to go and never does. The one is, who's it? Steve Van Buren?
Yeah, the 555.
Right, like 550 odd yards.
Yeah.
Every now and again, somebody gets on pace to smash it by like halftime, and I keep thinking it's going to go and just never does.
Goff does it once or twice a year.
Right.
He gets on pace.
So this was the game, right? Jameis had 300 yards at halftime and still didn't get there.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in this one. Let's stick with Jameis. I'm going to be writing him up on the website this week. His most recent run isn't exactly Tannehill-ish, but if Tannehill's on this 8, 9, 10-game stretch that's making the Titans reconsider, or at least consider, do we re-sign him, do we franchise tag him, or whatever, does Jameis's spot right now in recent weeks, back-to-back games over 400 yards and just putting up a ton of points, ignore some of the interceptions if you want and just kind of know what you're getting into? Is this making the Bucs either reconsider a long-term deal or saying, all right, we at least have to franchise tag him? Because just remember this quote at the beginning of the season from Bruce Arians. He said it takes 11, 12 weeks to really understand my offense.
Mm.
And there is this, you know, cutoff point right around week 12, where since that point, Jameis has been fantastic. Is that Arians finally getting through to him? And just to further the old Carson Palmer comparison, 2014, I believe, or was it 13? I mean, he had like 2 years with Carson Palmer, a year or two with Carson Palmer before the MVP caliber 2015 season. Is this starting to come to fruition?
And it's not just Carson Palmer. Like, he's gotten career years out of a few quarterbacks, and it's never come year one. Like, it's always taken a while for that to happen, and then boom, you get a crazy season where they put it all together. I do think that that's a potential possibility, right, is that Jameis and Arians, a year or two down the line, have this amazing connection where he has an insane career season, right? I also think it's entirely possible that we basically spend his entire career saying next year's the year for Jameis, and then it's the same thing every single year. And even since, he's definitely had an uptick, but we still have, he's had one game this season with an overall PFF grade above 80, and that was week two. Although, actually, that's pending last night. I'm not sure what last night's grade is going to shake out to being yet, but I doubt it's above 80.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be above 80. I mean, in recent weeks, though, it's a bunch of games in the green since week 12.
But he's this... So Jameis is this fascinating quarterback because he is cesium. He is the most volatile quarterback in the NFL. And that, in and of itself, raises some really interesting questions. So yesterday, Steven Ruiz on Twitter was saying, I don't understand anybody that thinks Jameis Winston is a bad quarterback. And I was like, well, it probably has something to do with the fact that he makes more mistakes than any other quarterback in the NFL. All right? It's not like it's rocket science to determine why people think he's bad. Now, you can definitely argue the merits of those bad plays versus all the good he does, because Jameis still, absurd as it is, leads the league in the percentage of his plays that are positively graded, right? Over all plays, on average, he makes more positive throws than any other quarterback in the NFL, consistently.
Yeah,
right?
Year over year.
Right. But he also consistently makes as many bad plays as anybody, right? Not necessarily just misses, but really bad, turnover-worthy type plays. So there's a fascinating battle this year for the turnover-worthy play champion, right? Jameis still leads the league, 34. But Kyle Allen is hot in his heels, one behind now.
Gosh, he had some bad ones.
Daniel Jones has dropped off.
There's a play up for review from Allen. He might.
Daniel Jones is now seven behind with the time he's missing. Phillip Rivers is sneaking up there. He's got 29. But anyway, the point is, Jameis now has the most, the highest percentage of positively graded throws, but also consistently makes as many really bad turnover-worthy plays as anybody, right? So the debate essentially becomes, like, where is the tipping point? What is the balance that actually makes that worthwhile or not? So, you know, you have talked before, and our data science guys like Timo / PFF Moo for people that work on Twitter alone. And, you know, the other guys,
smart.
You started the clock 28 minutes into the podcast. Nicely done.
No, so just add 28 to it.
Perfect. That'll be easy. So all those guys and you have talked about how the volatility is actually a more valuable thing than slow and steady, right? The Alex Smith, the Jacoby Brissett, those kind of guys, game managers. Having a higher volatile type quarterback is more valuable because eventually it will swing towards the positive. The fact that you're capable of making all those positive plays is a big thing. And also because ultimately, like at some point in the game, you're going to be down 2-3 scores, and you're going to need that guy to start slinging the ball.
It's and also because...
That's the Kirk Cousins thing, right? You bring him in as opposed to a Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater, because you believe that he is at least capable of executing that comeback.
Yeah, and it's also because I think we do downgrade heavily turnover-worthy plays. Mm-hmm. Not just every interception, but plays where you misread the coverage, you put the ball in harm's way, right? But an EPA-driven approach might say, you know what? You know, just an incompletion on third down, because possession of the ball is so important, right? And that's why we downgraded turnover-worthy plays for so long, right?
Right.
You're
so
losing possession of the ball. But failing on third down or just throwing an incompletion, even though you get 40 yards of punt and all that stuff, you're still losing possession of the ball. So maybe the difference between a turnover and, say, a third down sack or a third down incompletion isn't that strong, right? Plus, in previous years, Jameis had really done a good job of avoiding sacks. This year, not as much.
It also depends what you've done between the turnovers, right? So, again, Moo on Twitter yesterday made the point that essentially, like, two first downs and then a pick is basically the same as three and out from an EPA standpoint.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's a good way of putting it, right? So, Jameis... and Jameis never really has a ton of big-time throws. He actually, for the fourth straight year, will have more turnover-worthy plays than big-time throws.
Which in and of
unless
itself
he goes
is,
on a run.
Yeah.
You usually, the best quarterbacks are at a 2-to-1 ratio, and then the real best are 3-to-1, 4-to-1, or more. But, you know, 2-to-1 is your top 7 or 8. 1-to-1 is about the league average, whatever. So he's below. But the positively graded throws, those intermediate throws, he's moving the chains, right? And I think the point... When I first started talking to Eric Eager about this a few years ago, I said, look, we have a grade on Jameis Winston and Sam Bradford back in 2016 or whatever it was, which is very similar. But Jameis is averaging 5 more yards per attempt down the field. Average depth of target is about 5 yards different. Sam Bradford's setting completion percentage records. He's not putting the ball in harm's way, but he's got one of the lowest percentage of positively graded throws. So my point was how well they played the game might be similar in our grading system, but which one's more valuable? And I think you point to the aggressive guy more than the game manager. And when you have the aggressive guy, you can have games like last week. Jameis Winston had a 77.3 passing grade. It's not a 90, but he still went, you know, 33 of 45 for 456, 4 touchdowns. He had 3 picks in there, but you can create a ton of value there. Yesterday, over 450, 4 touchdowns. The passing grade's not going to be great again. So if you have the guy that's aggressive with good, not great results, can you extract incredible production out of your passing attack? I think you can, and that's the appeal to Jameis. Here's the other thing I want to write about, too, is the fact that we always talk about the Bucs defense. What if the defense could just cover a little bit better? I think we talked about this on the pod last week a little bit. What if they just built this coverage unit that was good? And if you look at since week 10, Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, former teammates at Auburn, two of our top graded corners, top like 8 corners, both of them since that time. It's a small sample size. But if the Bucs figure it out in the secondary and they almost just build a unit that's capable of hanging in these shootouts, we could see an 11-win season with Jameis, right?
We could.
With his volatility.
I don't think there's necessarily a right answer to this. I think a lot of people want to act like it's a slam dunk one way or the other. Like this idea that anyone that thinks he's not great or he's not good is an idiot. I don't think it's as simple as that. There are also people that say it's obvious Jameis is way more valuable than a game manager type quarterback. They use Jacoby Brissett. I don't think Jacoby Brissett is a great example because he doesn't actually grade that well. But let's say Alex Smith, right? Even, you know, reasonable baseline Alex Smith as opposed to high-end Alex Smith. I don't think that it's a slam dunk necessarily that you want Jameis over the Alex Smith if you have already built a team that tailors itself to an Alex Smith-style quarterback. So the Colts this year, they're really good across the board, right? And they have Jacoby Brissett. Let's say they had Jacoby Brissett playing at an Alex Smith level. That might be better than a Jameis who's just as capable of throwing all that away and overcoming the fact that he has the better roster and just going out there and putting the other team in a good position.
So here's the interesting dynamic. We got to wrap it up on Jameis, but I think it depends on if you build...
Tell me when to wrap it up.
I will.
I'll stop talking when
look
I'm done.
That. Look at that. I think it depends on how you build your playmakers, right? So if you have... Jameis Winston has had good playmakers to throw to.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a Mike Evans. He's had an emerging Chris Godwin. He's got these guys who win 10-plus yards down the field. If you have those guys and you can build your offense with those guys, you probably want Jameis or guys that are going to win contested catches and all that fun stuff because Alex Smith's not going to give them those opportunities, right? But if you have a nice Jamal Charles who can create in the screen game, you have a good play caller like Andy Reid who's going to put guys in space and create open throws for Alex Smith, right? Because he'll hit open throws at a high rate. And you have guys that can create after the catch, then you're good with Alex Smith. Either way, it's going to put some pressure on your defense because with an Alex Smith, you might only be scoring 20 a game, 19 a game. You have to keep the score low. But with Jameis, it's like you got to play well. Like we talked about the Chiefs last year, play well enough to make one or two stops and win the game 35-33, right? Like they did a couple weeks ago. So interesting discussions here. But Jameis, I think, even in his games where he's playing better the last few weeks, turnover-worthy plays, 3-1, 3-1. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games with at least 3 turnover-worthy plays.
Yeah.
So you're talking about like half your schedule, you're going to be playing with fire as far as turning the ball over. But like early career Andrew Luck, he could...
I mean, some of his games...
He can save you from the fire, too.
Some of his games are just madness. It's just, he's out there slinging it. Half the passes are going. Half the passes are dimes going to his receivers. Half of them are disastrous passes going straight to the opposition. And really, it's just a case of how that shakes out in terms of balance, right?
Yep.
It's too unpredictable for me to be comfortable embracing as a game plan, right? That's how I would essentially position this. The Jameis Winston thing, there is definitely merit to the idea of the upside is so high that I want to keep rolling the dice. It's like the payoff, right? I want to keep going for the long shot because when it comes off, like I'm taking it to the bank and I'm a millionaire.
So the point maybe it doesn't have to end in a Cam or Carson Palmer MVP season that I keep talking about. Maybe it's just the fact that look at this season. They scored 55 against the Rams, not all on offense, but 34 against the Seahawks, 30 against the Cardinals, 35 against the Falcons. Yesterday, 38, 38 the previous week. Maybe this is the payoff, but it's like a little bit better, right? You can have a high-powered offense with Jameis Winston at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal of offense, right, is to score a ton of points?
Sure, but you're also giving the opposition a ton of opportunities because he throws the ball to them regularly.
No, I get it.
That's the way I would sum it up, is that it's too unpredictable for me to be comfortable with that being my game plan. But I think that...
Just conservative, man.
I think given the history of Bruce Arians and these quarterbacks, I think there is a very real chance that they embrace the idea of one more year of Jameis. Let's see if this is the year.
I'm going to dive deep into it this week. We'll have it on pff.com. I think I might be leaning towards that whole franchise tag.
This is
tag.
The year?
Yeah. No, I would, franchise tag with look for the next guy.
I mean, sure. It, at this point, that makes sense, right? The franchise tag is there built. Right now, it's built for any quarterback where you think next year might be the year, but I don't want to bet the house on it.
The other thing you're betting on is Arians having a history of needing 10, 15 games with a guy, right?
The one thing you can say is that Jameis is a significantly better quarterback than David Blough.
So he struggled.
Yeah.
That's it. He continue to rebuild, Lions.
Not good.
We're looking to the offseason. 2-for-1 drafts is your podcast for this week.
Yeah.
All right. Green Bay Packers 21, Chicago Bears 13. I'm watching this game thinking Sam's rolling over in his grave right now, waiting for the pitch. Not
yeah.
your grave, but you were upset. You're upset. They had the pitch all set up.
The very last play of the game, the Bears executed some craziness. You know, the lateral thing, they didn't have a game plan, and then somehow they lucked into it, right? The ball went left, it then came right, and then, look, they've actually manufactured an overlap. So this is like, this is the holy grail in rugby, right? This is what you attempt to do. Rugby was described to me once as a game of space, and if you can get the ball out into space, you're golden, right? What you try and do a lot of the time is essentially execute a situation where you have two guys, a two-on-one. There's two guys against one defender. You draw that guy. You make him commit to tackling you. Just before he hits you, you pitch the ball out to the guy outside you who's now completely unblocked, walks in, right? The Bears actually, through complete blind luck, manufactured a two-on-one overlap. And instead of a simple rugby pass to the outside, to Allen Robinson, instead of tying the game, they crapped out and got tackled.
Didn't they have this set up last year, too?
Probably.
Wasn't it them?
Could have been.
With Tariq and...
All I know is that all they needed was one simple rugby pass.
Or did they set it up on
And this would have been a touchdown.
Oh, the Bucs set it up the right way last year, right?
Yeah, Bucs actually executed a rugby play. So, yeah, they... it's difficult because in this, there's clearly was no game plan here, right? This play, it was just chaos, and somehow it broke that way. But it feels like that's a skill that needs to be in somebody's arsenal, to be able to just recognize that there's a dude outside me. All I need to be able to do is to pitch the ball a couple of yards to my right, and it's a touchdown. They weren't able to get it done. The other thing that was interesting in this game is that Cordarrelle Patterson had one of the hits of the season, playing gunner, came down, absolutely wrecked the punt returner, who was Tremont Williams, I think, forced a fumble. Didn't fair catch it, forced a fumble, knocked it out, Bears recovered. Huge play, which then gets flagged and overturned that way. And that was a monstrous play in this game that, I mean, ultimately, that's the Packers then scored on that drive, which is the difference. That's the score between the two of them.
This was like so many of the Packers games this year, right? I mean, they get off to a lead. They feel like they're in control, and then their offense just cannot put teams away, or they just don't have that second half consistency.
And that play to me, the penalty, it wasn't like an egregious call. We've seen some pretty horrendous calls this year, and even this week there were some ugly ones. But
face
it was
mask that wasn't, and so
yeah, it was one of those calls where it was a victim of physics, not a victim of the hit you're trying to take away out of the game. Like, he leads with the shoulder, he hits him perfectly in the chest, but by virtue of the fact that the head is connected to both the shoulder and the chest, like, head helmet to helmet contact happened, right?
Yeah.
It's not that he hit him in the helmet or in the neck area. He hit him shoulder to chest, but he came at like 200 miles an hour, you know, as a gunner. Drill them full speed. Like, at that point, it's physically impossible to prevent heads contacting each other. Unless you're genuinely saying that, like rugby, your aiming point needs to now come down to, like, the belt buckle, right? Which is, I mean, if you want to do that, you can do that. Rugby is trying to do that now.
Right.
And they have, like, this zero tolerance policy of, if you're up here, unlucky. It's a penalty.
Yeah,
it's on you to go lower.
Yeah.
So Tremont Williams is crouching down. He's, like, 2.5 feet off the ground catching the punt. Like, if you want to have that zero tolerance policy and say, this is the deal now, you simply have to aim lower, that's fine. But that isn't what people are saying now. It's like, no, you can hit him there, but if then there's helmet-to-helmet contact, now it's a penalty. It's like, well, okay, but hitting him here, it's physically impossible to avoid that
it's
if I hit him
so
hard enough.
Fast.
Right.
The game's just too fast.
Yes.
For all of that. Khalil Mack for the Bears, third game this year with two or fewer pressures. A lot more games this year where he's kind of disappearing. And this is the game where the Packers generally have a pretty good pass-blocking offensive line, but Rodgers might hold the ball a little bit longer. You think you might be able to get some late pressure. They sacked him a bunch back in week one, but that wasn't the case in this one. They got rid of the ball a lot quicker. My boy Nick Kwiatkowski, still tearing it up, making plays in coverage, had a sack, but not enough for the Bears.
Dropped interception.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
I mean, it was a nice play to be there.
It's nice to be there, but you gotta finish it. Rodgers continues to only have two interceptions this year. He's getting away with a few, but overall, he played all right. Trubisky played just all right. Here's the point I wanted to try to make. I forgot to make on Brady before. The thing I love about the PFF system, and like Trubisky has been this the last couple weeks. If you have like average grades, so if you're like in the 60s as far as PFF grade goes, your stats could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you look at Brady's stat lines over the last few weeks with some grades in the 60s, which are certainly a regression from where Brady's been, but the stat lines look like he's fallen off the cliff. Right. Whereas other guys will put up average grades and they have 122 passer rating, or they throw three touchdowns and no picks or whatever it is. There's no better way than just to look at the PFF grade, look at the statistical output and say, OK, this there's either some help from playmakers and play callers or bad defense, or there's no help, or it's bad play or bad playmakers or bad disjointed offense, play calling, or whatever it is. And you know, that was Trubisky in this game. And even though he's graded well over the last few weeks, it's really with a couple peak games. He did really well against the Lions on Thanksgiving, did well against the Lions again in week 13. Other than that, it's a bunch of average games where the statistical output leading up to this game had been pretty good. And this is another game where he played about the same, but you get the passer ratings way down in the 60s again and two interceptions. And, you know, it feels like the Bears just aren't putting together that week to week, hey, the offense and the play calling is all together. They were showing flashes of the 2018 Bears in recent weeks, just like the Rams had, right? It's like, oh, are they back? Are they starting to get to that, get into their groove? But I just didn't feel it was much more disjointed in this one again.
Yeah, I think so. Trubisky playing back to the level he is playing at right now has put the offense back where it should be from a schematic point of view. Like, yeah. They had closed this thing down to such a ridiculous, rudimentary level of, like, look, I'm going to draw up four idiot-proof things, and you're going to go out there and try and run those. That's basically what the offense was earlier in the season when Trubisky was playing horrendously. Now they've at least gone back to what the offense should look like, but everything else isn't as good as it was, you know, in the past. Like, that 2018 season, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle in terms of so many things going well in a run that, you know, should lead to some sort of success, but Trubisky was their quarterback. So now those things aren't quite at the same level they were because that sort of stuff tends to regress. And though Trubisky is playing better and well enough for them to win in the right circumstance, and the offense now, you know, is functional, like, they're still, you know, they're not as good as they were, essentially. And that's basically what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And Trubisky isn't good enough to, you know, raise the game of everyone around him.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And that's why you have a 21-13 type of game.
Yeah.
Packers, it's really tight at the top as far as the NFC goes, as far as buys and number one seeds. Yeah, we've got some paperwork that fell.
Have you got...
But huge win for the Packers.
You currently Ken crawling on the floor to pick up papers for you.
Yeah, because I want to tell everybody about our friends over at Proper Cloth. Nice. Is that what you're wearing here? What you got here
today?
It is.
So I have a shirt that apparently the material is called Seersucker.
Yeah, Seersucker. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Joe Burrow was rocking a Seersucker suit.
Was he really? A Seersucker suit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole suit made of this stuff?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty common. It's good stuff. Nice.
Not in a suit, it isn't.
Yeah, it was. It was for Joe Burrow, Heisman winner.
No, no, no. You say it's pretty common. Like, there's no way a suit made of this is common.
I just remember my dad telling me he had one back in the day. So it's, I mean, maybe like, it was my dad common. Had one. Joe Burrow had one.
I could see this being common, like, back in the 70s or something.
Yeah, yeah, that was probably in the 70s, maybe the 60s.
Okay, yeah. Well, that would make some sense. It's kind of cool stuff, though, but yeah. I like.
And you went with the collar embroidery
always,
again.
Always.
I went with another shade of blue, but with some orange mixed in there. And I got my the slate buttons on this one. We love the customization over at propercloth.com. They're our friends supplying all of the shirts for all the podcasts you see here on the PFF YouTube channel. And if you go to propercloth.com/PFF today, use the promo code PFF20. You get $20 off that first shirt. Proper Cloth is the best custom shirt maker because they find stuff that fits 6'10", 270 to 80 pounds, Steve. It depends on the day, right? But I got the sleeve length. It's all...
Still going with the 6'10", nice. Huh?
Did I look 6'10" compared to Chase Young in the picture I sent you?
Yeah, but I already pointed out that he looks small.
Oh,
I'm just saying, you know, the list height is 6'10", but, you know,
you can't prove it.
Doctor seems to suggest otherwise.
Anyway, my Proper Cloth was all over ESPN TV. That's what I was rocking at the show. The best fabric producers around the world. Each one of the shirts goes through their extensive quality control testing, so you're getting the absolute best quality and craftsmanship. Once again, propercloth.com/PFF. Promo code is PFF20. For $20 off your first shirt,
you know what they also do?
As low as $80.
Yes, you know what they also do that I didn't even realize until I'd ordered all mine?
What's that?
They do short sleeve shirts.
They do.
I was like, look, it's winter, it's snowing outside.
You were just...
I was like, yeah, let's bundle up, let's get the heavy material, the long sleeve, without thinking that where we record the podcast is like 700 degrees. So actually what you need is the short sleeve.
No, I'm breathable. Not a big fan of the short sleeve shirt, but I do love the fact that it's there. Mm. The fact that it's available.
Yeah.
I appreciate
it. Well, short sleeve, and it's one way of taking care of the problem that you and I both suffer from to differing degrees, which is the sleeve length thing, right?
Oh, yeah. The short sleeve's different.
So short sleeve, you don't have to worry about it. You just chop it off there and you're good, right? If you have long arms, you need to start thinking about actual sleeve length. See, look at that. Look at that for perfection. Typically,
you do have long arms for your frame, right? So
typically, if I was getting a shirt that fit, this thing would be here.
And you got the watch space.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an option, too.
This thing would be like here, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
Because it's Proper Cloth, it's where it should be.
I like it. So go check it out. Propercloth.com/PFF, PFF20 for $20 off.
And obviously with you, you need to get like, you know, 6 inches longer.
Yeah. Like 41-inch arms, whatever it is.
41, really?
That's the arm length. Yeah. That's my shirt arm length. What's wrong with that?
No, nothing's wrong with it at all.
They have. I don't think I have to pay extra for extra fabric either. It's great. I don't think I do.
You don't get charged for the extra?
I don't think so.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go AFC South matchup. How hard could it be? Houston Texans, 24. Tennessee Titans.
What the hell is with this division?
21. I forget who I picked for this one. Did I talk myself into?
I definitely picked the Titans. And I thought for a decent period of this game that they were going to come back and get it done. Because, so this is a good
14-0 at the half, right? And it felt, yeah.
It's like, but one of those, like, it wasn't a legit scoreline, right? Because the Titans had actually been able to move the ball. This is a, so we're going to do a video series that goes out on social media called Don't Trust the Box Score or Never Trust the Box Score. Whatever it is, it's me railing against the box score, right?
Hate the box score.
One of the plays I'm going to be talking about is Ryan Tannehill's interception, which is probably like, I don't know, I haven't run the numbers yet, but let's say that's like 20 points of passer rating in that pick.
I mean, in the game, for sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's like 20 points of passer rating. The guy almost returned it James Harrison style for a touchdown. Oh. Put it like from the shadow of one goal line to the shadow of the other goal line in a heartbeat. And that was a well-thrown ball that hit his receiver where it should be. And in most times would be a touchdown.
Probably crushed his QBR.
Right, so it's a play that was almost a touchdown for Tannehill, was a well-thrown ball, at the very minimum should just be a completed pass for a few yards, right? Ends up being an interception because his receiver gets hit so hard that the ball just pops out, drops to Whitney Merciless, who takes off running James Harrison style. And unlike James Harrison, just couldn't, like, you know, beast his way into the end zone through a few players at the end. But this is a perfect example of that. So it's 14-0 at 14-0 for the Yanks.
Zero.
At the halftime, but it was a closer game than that because, you know, Tennessee could have scored that touchdown. And I thought Tannehill was still playing well, was going to come back, get it done, and they fell just a little bit.
At the same time, Deshaun Watson had an end zone interception. He had a couple interceptions that, you know, turns the game, kept Tennessee alive and all that stuff. I mean, Tannehill continues to sling it. They flipped the field with a 60-yarder to A.J. Brown, who continues to play. That was A.J. Brown on the 60-yarder, right? Super beast mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a 91-yarder from the end zone last week. This week it was 68 catches for 114 for Brown. Corey Davis had 3 for 57. See, he's just, see, it doesn't help me when he has like 19 yards per catch. I mean, that's nice and all.
Yeah.
But I need volume out of Corey Davis get to 1,000.
A.J. Brown had 8 receptions. Corey only had 3.
Yeah.
That's not ideal. He had one more than Tajay Sharp, though, so at least he's got that going for him.
Tajay, still sticking around. Our guy Kev Cole had a really nice article on Tannehill last week. I suggest you go check it out. We're just trying to explore all angles with this thing, right? Because on one hand, it's like, are you supposed to believe in Tannehill? Can you? Can he really have a year 8 complete turnaround? I mean, there was like a meme out there a couple years ago where everybody went through the last 6 years of people predicting breakouts for Ryan Tannehill. Kind of like people predicting Brady to fall off a cliff. I mean, they're all right. They finally got it. This is the Tannehill year. So, despite the loss, he still played pretty well. Houston played tough and they made plays when they needed them, even if they are fluky plays. And Houston continues to boggle the mind week over week.
As much as so, I mentioned the play in the Bears game that I didn't think it was an egregious call. There was a play in this game that was an egregious call. Was it Brennan Scarlett? Brennan Scarlett got flagged for an illegal hit on what was essentially just hitting a guy too hard. Guy crossing route, comes across the middle. You could not draw this up as a more perfect hit. It was shoulder to shoulder or shoulder to chest. Helmets literally didn't even get into the equation, right? Like, even if you slow it down, if you're one of those pedantic jackasses that, you know, goes super slow-mo, pulls up and goes, their helmet's touched.
Right.
It's a flag. It's a penalty. Letter of the law. Dictionary definition of a flag. No. You cannot manufacture any way of saying that this is a flag. He simply hit him so hard that it looked bad.
You know,
first run.
You know what?
And it got flagged.
You know what I'm seeing a lot of the other way, though? Slow-mo sacks. Where somebody's hand hits the face mask of the quarterback, where I think when they were emphasizing that a few years ago, like the second you touched anything anywhere near the quarterback's head, you were getting a flag. I'm glad they're letting it play because it's like a graze of the face mask and it has nothing to do with the play. But they're not calling it, is my point. Yeah. And it's kind of working the other way, where you're saying, like, you can manufacture seeing something. If they were using slow-mo to check all these things, there would be so many – you think there might be so many sacks that are overturned by face mask penalties these days.
Yeah, this was just a good example of, like, he literally hit a guy so hard that it looked like a penalty.
Yeah.
So they called it. And that was, like, it was a significant play in this game.
Man, I mean – even if you just look at the grades, like, Tennessee did a nice job overall defensively. Carlos Hyde went well above his run blocking, essentially. It was one of those weird games. If you look at all the grades, Carlos Hyde was doing the work more behind this Texans offensive line. And, you know, this just an odd game overall. We always talk about the pass games, and it all turns into, you know, Carlos Hyde making a whole bunch of key runs for the Texans, overcoming a couple interceptions from Deshaun Watson. Watson had a bunch of key conversions as well. It was a lot of just to me, it was, if this game just felt like a bunch of individual plays, quirky or not, that really flipped the script a few times back and forth.
Yeah, so this game gave, this obviously put the Texans in control, right, of their playoff picture. They now have a game lead in the division, and this division is not getting a wild card spot. So they're going to actually, whoever is coming out of this needs to actually win the division.
Yep, absolutely.
So this was a huge blow to the Titans, despite them looking like a better team in a lot of ways.
So that's it. Texans 24, Titans 21. Moving on to the AFC West, Chiefs 23, Broncos 3.
Those two teams play each other again, right?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So that's huge.
I meant to follow up on that. They do play again in Week 17.
Right.
The Titans' road is difficult, though, because they have the Saints next week.
What does the tiebreaker look like between the two of them?
That would involve research that I have not done yet.
Okay.
Since the game ended yesterday.
Good answer.
We'll discuss it again on Thursday.
Yeah.
When we're previewing stuff. Chiefs 23, Broncos 3 in the snow.
Snow game.
It would be too...
Dude, how awesome was it to see them warming up with a snowball fight?
That was... They looked... I mean, it was just... kids playing.
It really was, right? It was like unbridled joy of just fun in the snow.
Yeah.
This is them warming up and they're legitimately having a snowball fight.
Unbridled enthusiasm.
To the point where you're like, you know, if you were one of those sort of, you know, overly officious, anal people, you'd be like, those guys could get hurt doing this. Maybe we shouldn't be having a full-on snowball fight
a straw man argument,
5 minutes before a game.
Nobody said that.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying
if
you
like
were
your daughter, Scout, she was so
if
excited.
If you were
to see
one of those people,
night.
You could be like, "Is this wise?"
Yeah.
And yet they're just out there having fun.
Probably not. Shout out again to my fantasy guys really stepping up in the playoffs. Oh, Travis Kelce. I just want Deshaun Watson too.
Uh-huh.
Another guy. He was actually my fourth best quarterback yesterday, but he was the one I played.
Yeah. If you mention your fantasy team again, right, I am going to assist you in pitching off this platform.
Oh, don't forget, also, at @PFF_Sam, if you guys lost a heartbreaker.
One of two things is going to happen, right? I am
going to send a screenshot at @PFF_Sam.
I'm going to kick out of your chair, and one of us is going to pitch back off this thing. Physics would dictate it's probably me. But either way,
don't try it.
The pain will be ended.
At least not till the end. But Sam is a good ear to vent to.
Mm.
So this was like Mahomes' best game throwing the ball. You're in the snow. His best game of the season. Throwing the ball accurately down the field. Only didn't really miss many throws. Finding open guys. Snow games are weird because sometimes it's like, hey, it's technically in the offense's advantage because they know where they're going, but it's not easy to catch the ball, right? Not as easy to throw the ball. But you've got one side where Mahomes just carved up the Broncos' defense and the other side where it's too easy to just say, hey, Drew Lock was going to regress. He was due. And then, you know, happened to be in a snow game. You get that built-in excuse. But, man, some of his decision-making and stuff, bad.
Yeah.
End zone interceptions and negated end zone interceptions that turned into another end zone. And yeah, it was bad.
It's also another game where the sort of the game flow got completely away from them.
Right.
And so they went away from the only way they had a chance of winning this game. Like, if the Broncos are going to win this game, there was going to be a lot of running involved, right? Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman. This was supposed to be, you know, a steady 1-2 punch of thunder and lightning that was going to be the reason that they could go well in a snow game where running the ball often is your only hope. They got down. They started chasing the game, and Philip Lindsay had 7 carries in the day. Royce Freeman had 5. As a team, they carried the ball 15 times. Like, that's, I mean, you're done. You're not going to win like that because
Drew Lock drops back 42 times.
Right. That's a problem. that's unlikely to result in a victory.
I don't want to give the Chiefs defense too much credit because of the snow, but they have been playing better football in recent weeks. Chris Jones, another, you know, monster game off the edge. Juan Thornhill, the rookie safety, Tyron Matthew, both guys making a ton of plays. And, you know, Frank Clark, after the really slow start to the season, has been playing really well over the last few weeks.
Matthew's pass breakup in the end zone was really sweet.
Yeah.
Because that was in Cortland Sutton's hands, and he just went, like, ripped it right out of there. He's got this. There's a few players in the NFL that play with, like, a level of aggression that doesn't really exist that much anymore because, you know, if you're too aggressive, you get flagged for being too mean, the way Brandon Scarlett did. But Tyron Matthew still plays with that, like, level of aggression that you used to see commonly and is all too distant now.
Yeah, and he's always been good at just finding the football, breaking up passes, forcing fumbles and all that stuff. It was kind of what I envisioned with the Chiefs under Spagnuolo. It's not a great, you know, you're not looking at Bashaud Breeland and Tre'Varius Ward and saying, okay, here's some lockdown corners. But when you add in the rookie Thornhill, who just, he flies around the field. He'll make some mistakes, but he's around the football quite a bit. And Matthew's a similar player, as you're saying, his aggressiveness. You got some guys to play around with, scheme it up, mix things up, blitz sometimes, plays on. It's a better, probably all-around defense than what they had last year.
Yeah, it's definitely taken some steps in the right direction. And honestly, like a big part of their thing this year in terms of not being quite as dominant has been the offense struggling in places. Largely, it's Mahomes being banged up in various ways, shapes, and forms. His hand looked fine this week, so that's a big boost for them that isn't going to be like a long-term problem.
Yep.
But I think the defense has got to a point where it can make an impact relative to the offense if that offense gets teams in a shootout again.
Yeah, Chiefs are going to be dangerous again in the playoffs. And maybe starting to hit their stride a little bit more after some midseason lulls in there. So 23-3, the Chiefs win.
And they'll be hosting a playoff game because they will clinch the division, right?
Them and the Texans right now in line to host. I mean, if things continue as is, you're looking at, and if the top seeds win, you're looking at the Chiefs hosting a playoff game, the Texans hosting a playoff game. If the Chiefs win, they would go to New England. And if the Texans win, they would go to Baltimore. So we're looking at, that would be a rematch, two rematches mm-hmm. in the divisional round. And, you know, some pretty good matchups again, yeah, despite already seeing those matchups earlier this year. All right, Miami Dolphins at the New York Giants. Eli.
The YOLO Bowl.
Goes out on top. We'll go quick.
Back to 500.
Back to 500. This game may have epitomized all of Eli's career. He's going to end with a mediocre grade that involved some of the just multiple horrendous throws into coverage.
Yes.
Horrendous interceptions.
Honestly, this game could not encapsulate Eli Manning anymore if you like wrote the script for it to be this way. Rank average overall performance, some horrendous decisions, a couple of beautiful passes.
Some really nice throws.
And ultimately gets right back to 500 for his career.
Yeah, this is Eli. I mean,
it really is.
This was his thank you to Giants fans. He was like, I'm going to, you know how you like your life flashes before your eyes when before it's over? Before Eli's Giants career is over, he just let his
relive the whole thing in one game.
In one game. That's what he did in this game. Like, hey, Mr. Linebacker, I had no idea that you were there. I'm just going to throw it to you anyway, a couple times. And then he threw a corner route on the run, perfectly in stride. He was throwing seam routes left and right. He was showing touch outside the numbers. You know, he was a little of everything,
mm-hmm.
which was great.
And then the other side, you had Ryan Fitzpatrick, YOLO in his way.
He was doing the same thing. He was like, and then, so Eli's giving a tribute to Giants fans, right?
Here's the thing, right? Is Eli just Ryan Fitzpatrick without a beard who got two championships?
No, he's better than that.
Is he?
Yeah, Eli's better than that.
Is he?
Yeah.
If you took away the two championships,
take away,
would you say that?
No, there was definitely much more consistent high-end play in Eli's career. I think there was.
Well, so the thing is, right?
In it's lower end play in Fitzpatrick.
Remember how bad Eli was before the first Super Bowl? That Super Bowl not just like changed his career from a standpoint of, well, you got a ring now, you've actually achieved something, but it changed his career entirely from a standpoint of this changes how we approach what we do with you, right? If he hadn't gone on a run that year, I think he would have been under pressure in terms of like a starting gig from that point going forward. But he wins the championship. Suddenly that's all gone, right? We don't, now we're not talking about that at all. You get 5 more years of whatever because you just won a championship. It buys you all kinds of breathing room that Ryan Fitzpatrick never had, right?
And then
because he never won a championship. So Ryan Fitzpatrick's entire career has been, you are playing at this level. We're trying to get rid of you. Stop coming back. And so then, he just has to bounce around the NFL playing like this. Dude never gets any kind of like rope to hang himself with. It's
Eli's been better than Fitzpatrick over time. Just look at this.
What do you got?
I mean, just glance at it. Eli's been better than him over time.
Whose is that?
Fitz.
Okay. What's Eli's?
Better than that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hang on, I got that. Let me pull up Eli now. Dude.
That's a lot of red recently. But right. See all the green in the middle there?
There's that 1 year, right? That year changed everything.
I will say, with Eli, yes, it bought him some time, and then they did a nice job of adding, hey, here's Hakeem Nicks, here's Victor Cruz. That, you know, that helped go on a little multi-year run. And then Odell Beckham shows up, and you know, he was able to YOLO it with some pretty good playmakers for a few years until they ran out of playmakers, and it's like, all right, we can't disguise this anymore. I still say Eli's been better, but I thought Fitz did his best tribute as well. Where Fitz was, he made a ton of nice throws, and it's like, hey, we're going to fumble. And, you know, he made a few bad decisions in there as well, and, you know, had some turnover worthy plays in there as well that he got away with. So, yeah, I think Eli gave a tribute to Giants fans, and Fitz tried to give his tribute as well.
He did. All right, fine. Maybe Eli as a career is better than Ryan Fitzpatrick, but if he is, it's all 2011.
That's what I got. Giants 36. Dolphins 20. Mm-hmm. And we'll break down some more of the battle for the top five picks in the week 16 preview.
People are going to be so mad when you start leaning on the idea that the Giants should draft a quarterback.
I think they should consider it at least.
I know you do.
They should consider it. Oh, they should do their due diligence on every single quarterback.
Well, yeah, like everybody should do their due diligence, but they're not. There's just no way. It's not even. They're not going to have a shot at Joe Burrow because this takes them out of the number one pick, right? B, there's nobody after Joe Burrow that the obvious slam dunk, you must draft this guy.
See about Tua's health. Justin Herbert doesn't really inspire me much more than Daniel Jones does.
Right, so it's like a Joe Burrow or bust in terms of like a reason you would have to draft this guy.
Second round.
Daniel Jones has shown significantly more in his first year than Josh Rosen did last year, which is the obvious comp, right? It's like if you've had a season like Josh Rosen and a Kyler comes along, we kind of need to make that happen. If the Giants, A, don't have the Kyler because Burrow will be gone, and B, Jones has shown significantly more, albeit, you know, third in the NFL in terms of worthy plays. So it's just, it's not going to happen, and I don't even know that they should do it at all.
Do we change the Jones narrative to just wait on his? It becomes Jameis. Just wait on.
He's Jameis. Who is Eli? Who is? They're all the same person.
They're all the same.
He's a highly volatile quarterback who, because you get enough of the good, you're going to give a long time to make it sure that he can get it done. Ultimately, that's what being a highly volatile quarterback does for you. Is it buys you a crap load of time that other guys don't get, right? Because you consistently put the high-end upside in front of coaches' eyes, and that's what they love, right? Now, they are willing to overlook an incredible amount of crap if you show them some high-end plays, and those highly volatile players do it every single week. It's just they also show you a bunch of the low-end stuff.
If I could just coach out some of that bad stuff.
Right. So Daniel Jones, because of the good stuff he's shown, has bought himself an immense amount of time, even if he didn't already have it because Gettleman went out on a limb and drafted him 6 overall, at which point he's going to get like 5 years to prove he's wrong.
No, of course. I mean, I know my entire concept of continue to look for a quarterback is counterintuitive to the way NFL teams work. I think it just should be considered. It doesn't mean spend a first rounder on a quarterback every single year. But if Jacob Eason's there in the second round, I don't think using a second rounder on a quarterback is the worst thing in the world if you're the Giants. All right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right, we're staying in our old order, even though it was Sunday Night Football. Buffalo Bills, 17. Pittsburgh Steelers, 10. Duck regressed back into the duck.
Yeah, so people got mad at me for saying that a guy called Duck might struggle against the Bills' defense this week. Turns out that a guy called Duck struggled pretty badly against the Bills defense this week.
Who got mad at you?
A whole bunch of people on Twitter. Podcast listeners, people listening to this right now.
They were mad because you
were upset.
Were you making fun of his name or?
I just said that, look, it was a pretty good chance that a guy like him was not going to do well against a really good defense.
I mean, he was an undrafted free agent. Kind of looked like it yesterday.
Yeah.
And the Buffalo defense is really tough to play against, so it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. I did think the Steelers at home, the defense would be able to make enough plays to win the game. But Buffalo just continues to roll, man. 17-10. That D is legit.
Even the last play of the game was kind of funny, right? So they ran one play, needed to hurry up, spike the ball, run a play, whatever. James Washington, I didn't see what he ran the play before, but he was way down the field somewhere. He just ran a long way and then had to run his ass all the way back to the line of scrimmage. By the time he got to the line of scrimmage, he was wrecked, right? Basically,
you have to know that.
Yeah. So as soon as this play starts, he like jogs off the line of scrimmage, like puffing and wheezing into his route, like jogging his way to the corner. And that's the guy Duck thinks he should heave the ball in the direction of. Like, that dude is just mailing it in on this play. He is knackered.
I thought Chris did a nice job showing it, too. You've got Duck rolling to his left, throwing the ball off balance, and he just throws a line drive interception. When it's like, dude, it looked like a little Cody Kessler out there trying to make an off platform.
Yeah, I mean, he just didn't have the arm to make that throw.
Did not.
He had a receiver that was like, look, I am done. Unless this ball comes right to me, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So Buffalo, Tre'Davious White, it's funny because Tre'Davious White, he's gotten beat a little bit this year, but overall he's been solid. And, you know, he had the national stage to show off his skills. Mm-hmm. Beautiful interception early on. He looked like he was really hurt and then ends up coming back into the game. He made some really nice plays. I really love what Buffalo has done with their linebackers, even though, you know, Matt Milano's got the number 6 coverage grade among our linebackers. Tremaine Edmonds has been a little bit more up and down, but you could still see his playmaking ability, right? Like what he brings into the middle of the defense. Edmonds and Milano are really active. I mean, Buffalo, it really is. I mean, there's no real superstar there, right? Like, Tre'Davious White's a star, mm-hmm. I'd say. Micah Hyde has turned himself into just a really good, solid player, but it's just an awesome team defense that for the second straight year is top 5 in EPA allowed and just really strong and solid across the board. I feel like we say this every single week.
This was also the Edmonds Bowl.
It was. All the Edmonds played.
All 3 of them. I didn't even realize that the running back was also an Edmonds brother. It's, by the way, it's hilarious to me that they keep talking about them as 2 first-round picks. I mean, sort of. Like, 1 first-round pick and a guy that, you know, they turned in the wrong card or whatever, but
oh man,
just the idea that Terrell Edmonds is a first round player is just absurd on the face of it.
Other people had him in the 3rd, Sam. They had him as high as the 3rd.
I did not find a single human being that had him above the 5th. Where's that guy? I need to look at that guy's name to do that, like, tracks the draft stock over time.
Oh,
because his must be hilarious.
Yeah,
and even now, right? Like Tremaine, who had all the big-time talent and the athleticism and the youth, everything on his side. Like, he's coming good. He looks really quite handy at times this season. Terrell remains Terrell, which is, at best, an average safety.
Yeah. As much as I say the Bills are solid defensively, they somehow missed 16 tackles, which is incredible. Usually you have a 16 missed tackle game, it's like, all right, you must have given up 40.
This game generally was very sloppy in terms of whether it's missed tackles, fumbles, ball security. Everything was iffy in this game.
I just think Buffalo overall, I always use the phrase, makes life difficult on opposing quarterbacks. They do mostly tight window throws and, you know, mixing up coverages just enough. They're basic, but they mix things up just enough to keep things off balance. Other side of the ball, your boy Bud Dupree all of a sudden shut out again.
Again, right?
You know, he's just, you know, been up and down a lot.
Cameron Hayward, beastly. TJ Watt, beastly.
Yeah.
Bud Dupree, nothing. Like, almost entirely blanked from the stat sheet.
Yeah.
Missed as many tackles as he made and
not
got
great.
Zero pressure. TJ Watt, so a lot of people were putting him in the defensive player of the year conversation.
Where do you think he stacks up?
People are saying that, like, this year, the defensive player of the year, it's the race is wide open. It's anybody's to have, right? I'm going to contradict myself in the space of about 12 seconds here. I'm going to make a case this week in an article on PFF.com that Eric Kendricks is actually putting together a defensive player of the year kind of season, right? And actually has the strongest case of the Vikings, even though Danielle Hunter is the guy everybody's talking about because he has a lot of sacks.
Right.
I think Kendricks is the best player there and one of the best players on defense this season, and would be one of the players on that list, the short list of defensive player of the year candidates. But honestly, it's only a short list because people got bored giving it to Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald is still the best defensive player in the game by a reasonable distance, but he doesn't have 20 sacks like he did a year ago, so now we're looking elsewhere.
Does he have like a quiet 12?
Yeah, something like that. I'm pretty sure he's somewhere in the like low to mid, you know, low teens. And because that's not 20, it's like, oh, Aaron Donald sucks this year.
Yeah,
Aaron Donald's still the best defensive player in the game.
That used to get attention for interior defensive linemen. Now it's like, oh, you dropped off by 8.
And again, 12. because you're coming from 20. It's like, well, like, so the season before he had 13, and he was defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
So, and the season before that,
he's still dominating as far as getting pressure. He's moved to the edge. Right. He's done a lot of different things.
This, in fact, is already the second best season he has just in terms of sacks. And if he gets one more in the last two games, he'll tie his second best season. It's just that he's coming from 21. So,
but you're going to lay out Donald as the guy, or there are actual because there's a lot of guys who at least have their name in the mix, right?
Yeah, I haven't actually worked out exactly what that article looks like since you ruined it in the production meeting we had.
What do you mean?
Well, I had a whole plan, and then you came out and took giant steaming crap all over it, and now I'm not entirely sure what the article looks like.
Pretty sure I made it better.
I don't think you did.
I made it something that the listeners are going to want to read.
Yeah. Anyway, at some point I'm going to be writing about Defensive Player of the Year and Eric Kendricks in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not entirely sure what that looks like yet.
All right. Well, everybody go read Sam's article this week. It's going to be fire, as the kids say.
Wow.
And, you know, we have millions of listeners here.
Okay, Boomer.
Did Boomer drop that? Oh.
You're so Boomer, you don't even get the joke.
Yeah, I did. I get the joke now. But I thought, I was like, oh, Boomer Esiason said that too? And
yeah.
That's a good job. I am old. Okay, Zennial.
That's us.
All right. Good job, Bills. Josh Allen had an up-and-down game. Missed some throws, made some plays with his legs, threw some lasers for completions. So another one, just like the Brady and Trubisky, it all lands in a pretty average grade where if you want to skew positive on it, he does find ways to make plays in the fourth quarter.
You want to skew positive, Steve?
Yeah. That's me skewing positive on it.
Fair enough. All right.
An inconsistent performance again.
I did like the imagery they were painting. For some reason, they spent a lot of time talking about how small all of his skill position players were. I'm not quite sure why we needed to go that hard on that.
This big monster.
But there, yeah, like painting this image of you, like in the land of the Lilliputians, of Josh Allen stood there surrounded by a bunch of like 5'8" receivers and running backs.
Hey, those are the types of guys that they got to extract the MVP year out of Cam. Not the big monsters, the guys who got open and were fast and quick and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Good job, Bills. They're going to be playing for a potential bye next week with the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
They're still alive.
So there were a few games this week that really swung like some playoff implications.
Yeah.
So the Bills are legit. And so the Bills are A, legitimately still alive for that division, and B, this idea of them knocking off the Patriots is not nearly as ridiculous as it seemed earlier in the season.
Well, no, they lost 13-10 in the first matchup, yes, in Buffalo.
Right, but I think so that happened, and then
the Patriots
a few weeks later
was better at the time.
Yeah, and a few weeks later, I was sort of suggesting that they could potentially, beat them down the line. It was kind of, you scoffed at it, and I eventually came around to the idea that you were right. But now looking back at it again, it's like they could really beat New England.
They could.
At which point, they would take the division. The Patriots would still get into the playoffs, but for the first time in a long time, they would have a crappy route through should they actually want to win anything.
So I made the comparison to the 2017 Jags. I kept saying they reminded me a lot of the Jets, the Rex Ryan Jets, where they had Mark Sanchez at quarterback, who was inconsistent, but he can make some plays here. And if you watch Mark Sanchez enough those first couple of years, you'd be like, he's in his first couple of years and he does some nice things. Like there were some games where Sanchez was really, really good, right? But largely that defense carried them in the run game and all that stuff, and they were running Wildcat a million times or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills also kind of resemble that a little bit, where the quarterback's okay and he does some nice things on the ground. He does enough to add value to the offense, but it's really a defensive-driven team in Buffalo, where in any given game, Josh Allen puts up three touchdowns, one on the ground, whatever, and you know, Cole Beasley and John Brown make some plays, and it's like, that's a tough team to beat. I mean, that's what this New England-Buffalo matchup, which is Saturday now, Saturday at 4:30.
It's three games on Saturday?
Yeah, triple header on Saturday. You thought you had Saturdays off, huh?
I really did.
No.
I got to break that to the missus. She's not going to be happy.
I'm free. My wife's heading back home Tuesday, so I'm like,
damn it.
Wings.
My problem is right now that the green card application is I'm grounded, so they're not going to be leaving anytime soon.
Oh man, you got no.
I got no bachelor no time coming up.
Nothing. Huh?
Nothing.
I've just got a ton of football watching over the next week until I go back. And
we should definitely do wings again, though.
Should do wings.
Drive up.
Let's talk after the show. Mm-hmm. So it should be a good matchup. We'll be previewing it later in the week. Let's go to the NFC East. The Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
Staying alive, 37-27. That's not real. 37-27.
I thought George was going to destroy things out in the watching area yesterday.
Did that cost us?
Oh yeah, it cost him. I think.
Oh,
I think
him.
That might have been a super contest pick. Either way, he was very unhappy at the cover at the end.
No way.
For anyone that doesn't know, so this game was a 4.5 points to close, or whatever it was. The Eagles were like one side of the cover. With the touchdown that they scored to take the lead at the end, Washington with 6 seconds left on the board. Haskins tries to pitch it back because he's in the grasp. Fumble, recovered. Eagles running in for a score. That shifted it to the other side of the cover. So a lot of people that had money on this game found themselves on the end of one of the worst beats.
Is that what happened, or was this the kickoff one?
No, this was the death, the end of the game.
Did I see a kickoff one, too? Losing track of what I saw now yesterday.
I don't know. This was the fumble, like Haskins in the grasp, 6 seconds on the clock, pitches it back to try and keep it alive because they need to score. Fumble, Eagles pick it up, run in, another score. That changed the cover of this game. And a lot of people who had money on that, understandably very upset.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah. This game was bizarre, right? So the Eagles still have basically no wide receivers. JJ Arcega-Whiteside, and look, I'm not going to ever pronounce it the way that everybody has obviously been instructed to pronounce it because I just can't make my face make those sounds.
Wait, other people are?
Well, clearly a memo has gone out to like all broadcast people that there's a specific pronunciation of this man's name.
Which is what?
You say Arcega, instead of the S, you need to make it a TH sound.
Arcega.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you're saying it wrong.
Well, that's how it is in Spanish, right?
Arcega, yeah.
Yeah, like there was a goalkeeper years ago whose name was like Zubizarreta with Z's, and you turned them into
so
DHs.
It's not really how you say it in Spanish.
So it's like Zubizarreta. It sounds ridiculous.
I took AP Spanish. Listen, it's not really how you say it in Spanish. It's more of like a dialect thing.
I'm just saying, there's clearly been instructions sent out that this is how you say this man's
name. The proper
name.
Way to say it in Spanish is Arcega.
Well, why don't you tell him? You send him a message.
I will.
Excuse me, sir, you're pronouncing your name wrong.
If he starts catching the ball...
Anyway, he was playing a lot, didn't really get the ball sent his way. This was a game where like Zach Ertz looked like he was going to get like a million targets in the course of the game on the grounds that he was their only viable receiver for a big part of it. Ended up being a more of a sort of Miles Sanders kind of game.
And Boston Scott.
Boston Scott, yeah.
So Boston Scott and Miles Sanders combined for 13 targets.
Best play Boston Scott made in this game didn't count, by the way.
Yeah.
It looked like the Eagles had turned the ball over, and Boston Scott like forced a fumble on the fumble to get it back. Then they decided it was an incomplete pass anyway, so it didn't matter. Wentz in this game, this was like, so the Giants game was like Eli's career in a nutshell. This was Wentz, where most of it was crappy, but then he throws a pass that like two or three players in the NFL can make. This touchdown to Miles Sanders, did you see that?
Yeah.
In the back of the end zone? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it looked reasonable on the initial broadcast, and then every replay of it made it look more absurd.
Right.
It was on the run, sees it, Cox fires a bullet into a no window. It was virtually no margin for error, past two different defenders, right into Miles Sanders' guts. Falling backwards into the back of the end zone, right? And as Chris Spielman says, one cheek down equals 2 feet.
That's true.
One ass cheek, 2 feet.
There should be a book about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it might have made a catchier title.
Oh, man. Wentz is...
One cheek equals 2 feet.
Remember when Wentz was coming, I thought Wentz would be more volatile when he came out. And then he played a pretty clean, you know, short game was good. He played like a cleaner brand of football. Even as a rookie, he played a cleaner brand of football than I expected. He had that peak MVP season. Something's been missing since that point. And then in recent weeks, I know the receivers are all hurt and all that stuff. But something has been, like the fumbles have been a disaster. He's been a lot more volatile. This was actually more of what I expected from Wentz coming out, but I feel like he was really well protected early in his career. Now he's just a little bit more out on an island because he's got, you know, he has to throw to running backs 13 times and throw 16 targets to tight ends like Dallas Goedert and
that's
Zach Ertz.
So that's the other thing about this game, right, is that so Wentz is great. He's going to come out and be bad.
Yeah.
But if you look at the box score, 30 of 43 over 266, three touchdowns, no interceptions, pass rating 109. Looks great, right? And the grade isn't that good because there's some bad throws in there anyway. But
even like 6.2 yards per attempt, I mean, the touchdowns are making that.
But anyway, it looks fine, right?
Yeah, sure.
But there's two bad fumbles in there.
Right.
There is a terrible one where he just like knew the pressure was coming, tried to like fight his way through it, and the ball got stripped out. And then there's another one. Whereas more case of like, just, how long did you think you had before this became a problem? So one where you literally knew the pressure was there and tried to make something happen and the ball got stripped. And the second where he didn't know it was there, but he really should have.
And the funny thing with all that, his grade under pressure, which includes those plays, wasn't that bad because he's able to offset it with those spectacular 121.9 passer rating under pressure. This is what I'm saying with Wentz volatility. Those ridiculous plays under pressure and, you know, scrambling and all that stuff. He was doing that his MVP season. He's flashed that at times this year. There's still just that down-to-down disconnect, which, again, a lot because who the heck is he throwing to?
Yeah.
Even if it's not name recognition and, you know, credit Greg Ward for having a solid game and all that
stuff. AF superstar.
Yeah. I mean, and former quarterback at Houston and stuff.
I always liked Greg Ward at Houston.
You did. I mean, credit him and all that stuff, but that's tough on the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, this revolving door of playmakers and bringing Robert Davis in there and, you know, Arcega Whiteside had to play. Was it a career high 71 snaps, I assume?
And they basically had two receivers again still.
Yeah. Oh, no, last week was
like cool. Arcega Whiteside, Robert Davis, right. Greg Ward was the other guy that had like almost all the snaps, but there are the two receivers, Robert Davis, who had 16, and Joshua Perkins, who's a tight end, basically played worse receiver.
Yeah. So the Eagles are piecing it together.
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? Because the Eagles win, Dallas also win. Theirs is more convincing. But the whole Dallas, Philadelphia, which bumbling, you know, bag of Muppets is going to make their way to the top of the division and host a playoff game.
There's a quotable.
Yeah. It's a punchline, right? It's like which one of these terrible teams is going to end up getting through. But I've said this before, the last two sides that won their division with a losing record have won the playoff game. There's something to the idea of hosting a playoff game is pretty freaking significant, even this year where home field advantage is less than it's been in the past. B, both of these two teams have the capability or the pieces in place to be dangerous slash good on any given week, right? Dallas, maybe more obviously than the Eagles, but even the Eagles, they've still got a really good offensive line. You've got Carson Wentz, who as you know, maddening as he can be, is capable of making those crazy plays in the back of the end zone for touchdowns. You've got one of the most fearsome pass rushes in the NFL. You've got coverage defenders who are still capable of making plays, even if they get torched every now and again. You know, Malcolm Jenkins can make plays, Ronald Darby, Avante Maddox. They've got players there. So everybody is, I think, going to be taking these teams lightly because of how absurd their run-in has been. But both of these teams in the postseason are dangerous, should they make it.
Completely agree. And I don't think you know, your analysis is on. I don't think that our like preseason analysis should be completely thrown out the window. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
It's not this whole like, oh, you don't want to see these teams. They're no more dangerous than, say, the other non-bye teams, we'll say, the Vikings or even if the Rams snuck in, you know. But they're dangerous. You know, I don't think you look at their record and it's like, all right, here's your cakewalk. It's not like a college football game where the spread's going to be 21, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a close spread, and it's going to be, you know, a pretty good game.
Nobody can actually win this division with a losing record anymore, right? Because they both have to play each other.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Good
tie.
True.
7-8-1.
That would get it done.
7-8-1 is still alive. Somebody's got to win it.
Excellent.
One of those games a few weeks ago, Haskins had game where he graded better than the stats. This is probably going to be the opposite. Really did make some nice throws and all that stuff. But
yeah, I think for a few weeks in a row now, Haskins has at least started to flash things that are encouraging.
Yeah.
Even if the overall picture is not necessarily amazing, like there was a horrible pass down the middle that should have been intercepted, wasn't. Also, bizarrely, they were using him as an option quarterback. He looks even less...
Like Stephen A. Smith was calling plays.
He looks even more ungainly running the ball than Jameis Winston does.
Yeah, there was a reason why I gave him the Sam Bradford comp. I mean, I don't think the pocket movement or
kind of
movement in general is very good.
Adrian Peterson passed, was it passed or tied Walter Payton? It must be touchdowns, right? There's no way he's anywhere near him in yardage. That's pretty impressive as a career achievement.
AP's had a great career.
Certainly more than Frank Gore inching his way ever higher in the yardage markers.
Are you ready to fly through the rest of the games?
Yeah, what do we got?
Seattle 30, Carolina Panthers 24. Not as close as the score would indicate.
It really wasn't. How the hell did this game ever get close?
Seattle has a knack. There's a stat out there. They're like 10-1 in one score games or whatever it is. But Seattle has a knack. So it's one of those things where, like, one-score games generally mean you're not as good as your record would indicate. But on the other hand, they've been in, like, had so many of these games in hand and then handed the ball off so many times, taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand, that the other team just comes back. That was the Atlanta game a few weeks back.
Yeah.
There's all these games that they're, like, winning handily. Even, like, the Rams game on Thursday Night Football early in the season, the Seahawks just feel like they're in control and then try to lose it.
But it was bizarre. So Russell Wilson is out here, like, dealing in this game, just dropping dimes everywhere. Chris Carson was wrecking people as well. Like, he averaged, what, 5.5 yards per carry? He was a beast in this game. So every part of the offense is singing. And somehow this game becomes close. Who am I talking about? Josh Gordon makes one of the catches of the season. Deep ball from Russell Wilson, like fingertip grab, falling over. Beautiful catch.
That was awesome.
It's insane that this game became close, particularly with Kyle Allen trying to like turn it over every possible opportunity. As I say, he's crawled to within one turnover-worthy play of Jameis Winston. And I don't know if this was, I don't know if this is like a general clamor or if this was just Andre Siciliano on the Red Zone channel yesterday. Like every time he looked up was trying to get Will Greer in the game. I don't know if that's permeated to everywhere else, but we've certainly reached a point where it's getting harder and harder to defend the idea of Kyle Allen seeing out the remainder of the season.
Yeah, at least just check out Will Greer. I mean, Allen, ton of turnover-worthy plays again. There's one who's a little iffy with the, you know, with the receiver in the middle of the field. But Allen,
I mean, I think it's
inaccuracy
less,
and just off right now.
It's less about Greer now and more about Kyle Allen has entered the Marcus Mariota realm of you need to bench the guy to say that this is just not cool. Like, you know, I was willing for a while to see how this played out in terms of your balance of beautiful passes to turnover-worthy disasters. Now this used to be an interesting balance. Now it's like swung like this. This is no longer okay. We're going to see what the rookie has.
Yeah.
But I mean, apparently, I don't know if that, like I say, I don't know if that's become like a general clamor or if that was just Siciliano trying to make it happen.
Through, yeah, not really sure.
Through lending voice to the thought.
Josh Gordon also had the worst pass of the game.
Yeah.
Interception, underthrown.
I mean, that's part of, that'll help swing things.
That helps swing
in the
things.
Other direction.
Underthrown interception. But yeah, as far as throwing the ball, Russell Wilson was fantastic. He did have a fumble that was negated by a penalty that was a little bit poor in the pocket, but he had three more completions at 20 plus yards for almost 120 yards on those three. It has that nice connection with DK Metcalf still. Yeah. I mean, they're just it's one of those things. I don't think the Seahawks are putting Wilson in a good position to succeed as far as like giving him the early down cheap passes. There's not enough like quick game in there where you can just kind of like rack up the stats. But at the same time, because they do run the ball so much, I'm not saying their play action attack is better, but they do a really nice, because they run the ball so much, they try so hard to set up these deep shots. And that is Russell Wilson's strength. And I do think that's been a part of his success. They're doing everything that they can to free up these big play. They do have some good speed and they have these big play receivers to free these guys up down the field. And Russell Wilson gets to take 4, 5, 6, 7 shots down the field per game, which he's good at. So as much as the offense kind of like works against him, I do think they give him those shot plays and work to his skill set pretty well in that regard.
This game, it's not quite holding up, but almost had the most amazing stat ever, which was that of all of the pressure charged to the Seahawks offense, all of it is being charged to Russell Wilson. We've had an extra pressure added to DJ Fluker so far in review, so it's not holding up as is.
Yeah,
but that's kind of amazing.
He had a lot of plays, again, where it's clean pocket and he just steps outside the leverage of his linemen,
mm-hmm.
and it just brings the defense into him. We charge him with 2 sacks, 3 QB hits, and 2 hurries, and you know there's just too many of those plays. One of the sacks, you know, it's 2nd and 10, and he's losing 7. There's another one at the end of the half. Those are some negative plays that he does need to try to avoid. And, of course, there was the sack, the fumble in the pocket that got negated. But overall, Wilson, again, still playing pretty well, and we declared him still as the MVP because he's got a little bit more volume over Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing more. The thing about MVP, the way we're doing war, is it takes in how well your teammates are playing.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks are a bottom half of the league team.
One of the worst offensive lines in the game, still.
They're bottom half of the league team when you take Wilson's war out of it. His wins above replacement. When you put him back in, they're in the top 10. And that's one way to kind of.
And not just in the top 10, but this game actually propels him into the number one seed right now.
Yeah, right.
It's insane.
I mean, this is one of those seasons where it's not just the fact that he's our highest graded quarterback. It's also with everything around him not being great. Whether it's the defense, having to play in some shootouts, having to play behind a poor offensive line and all that stuff. So Wilson, overall, still playing well with the Panthers. Let's see, Will Grier.
Mm-hmm.
Quick break to tell you about our friends over at Western and Southern. It doesn't matter if it's football or financial wellness, the right questions will always give you the best chance for a win. Western and Southern has partnered with us here at PFF to give you a chance for an up-close and personal look at the X's and O's that will lead to both financial and football success. Looking for insight on your financial future? Need an inside-the-huddle tip? Head to westernsouthern.com/askchris. That's ask-chris to ask Western and Southern and PFF your most pressing questions. You could even win tickets to the big game. It's westernsouthern.com/ask-chris.
C-R-I-S.
C-R-I-S. That's Chris's name.
Mm-hmm.
Go check it out. Win tickets to the big game, Sam.
Yes.
Can't say the name of the game, but it's a big game.
What do we got next?
Jaguars 20, Raiders 16. I mean, this was like, there's five games.
How the mighty have fallen.
Dude. We got to call George out for his potential. He had Gruden as potential.
Coach of the year.
He's like, we're going to be back here in week 16. Coach of the year for John Gruden. I mean, they just played.
Dude, was it last year that was your over-under bet on them 6 wins?
Yeah, and they would be like,
they might only get to 6 this year.
Yeah.
Like they got 2 games left. They're 6-8 right now.
My take has been that the Raiders this year are what they should have been last year.
And they might end up with 6 wins.
There's 5 4 o'clock games going on, and this looks like it's 16-3, and the Raiders are just going to, I mean, they're just playing it by the book, right? They're like, the Jags haven't moved the ball this entire game. We're controlling the clock. We're just going to continue to control the clock and run it out and punt on 4th and 1 and do all the by-the-book stuff. And maybe they'll score a late touchdown and we'll win 16-10 and we'll feel pretty good about ourselves. Then it gets to 16-10. Then the Jags get the ball back again. And they score again. Oh, it got to 16-6. And then to 13. And then to 20. And the Jags made the comeback against the sleepy Raiders.
So it was, this was a game coming in, whereas, you know, Raiders have sort of underwhelmed against a bunch of teams that actually, it turns out, are probably better than them. But the good news is, you're coming up against Jacksonville, who are, you know, one of the few teams on paper that might actually be worse right now. And this honestly was just a game between two bad teams, neither of whom seemed particularly interested in winning. And the Jags, you know, were the least inept of the two sides and consequently won the game by the end of it.
Yeah, this is bad.
It really was.
Bad football.
You had some decent performances from the Jacksonville defense. In particular, Yannick Ngakoue continues to make himself a really interesting player going forward because that guy's got some real juice as a pass rusher. Obviously, basically zero interest in playing the run. Can get after the pass. He had 2 sacks, a ton more pressure in this game as well. You had some decent play on the back end. A.J. Boye had a decent game. But yeah, this was not a lot of good in this.
Derek Carr did his best work. Intermediate middle, 10 to 19 yards. In between the numbers, 4 for 4 for 85 yards and a touchdown. Only completed 1 out of 4 passes at 20-plus yards down the field. I'm still going to come back to, if Derek Carr versus Jameis Winston, they're like the opposite guy right now. Derek Carr, you just feel good about. He's going to have a zero in that interception column at the end of the game. But you're going to have a lot more games where you're scoring 16 like you did yesterday. And I know he doesn't have. I do believe that both of these teams are very similar in that we didn't think that they had good playmakers coming into the year. And that's been the truth.
Yeah.
That's been.
Right.
They overachieved.
For a brief period, it looked like Minshew was capable of raising the level of all of those receivers and turning them into a decent-looking receiving core. Yeah, you know, the longer it goes, the less that looks, you know, like it happens.
So, you know, I give credit to Carr as far as, like, helping elevate these guys throughout the year. But, man, I still just want to see more aggressive Carr. I just want to see more aggressive everything from the Raiders. So... Minshew, magic. It was back.
Sort of. Let's get the hell out of this game because there's other more interesting games and there's nothing interesting in this game.
Cardinals 38, Browns 24.
There we go.
Look at that timer.
It's a smooth transition. The Browns are about as depressing as the Raiders and Jags.
Yeah.
They have the same record as the Raiders, right? So they're equally as depressing as Oakland. I do not understand how this offense is so completely unable to just get everyone on the same page. I don't get it. Like, there's all this talk of, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. trying to get himself out of Cleveland. He's, you know, looking to get out of this mess. And, you know, there's little clips of him talking with Jimmy Garoppolo, like, you know, get me over to San Francisco. And, you know, and a lot of that, I think, is media-driven, just spin, right? Like, somebody asked him, what does the future hold? And he's like, who knows what the future holds? And they're like, well, he won't commit. He's trying to get out. No. But, like, he's been a huge part of the problem. Like, I drew up last week a couple of passes that were perfect dimes from Baker Mayfield landing in his hands. He's not able to bring him in. There was a stone-cold drop in this game that was a big problem. He's already got the second most drops in a season he's ever had in his career. Like, he's just not playing well. The whole Browns offense is just in this consistent funk. And then the other side of the ball, it looked like they'd never seen an offense like the Cardinals were running, whether it was on the ground, whether it was receiver spread out. Like, their defense couldn't stop anything either.
Yeah, we've talked about, starting with the Cleveland pass game, we've talked about this all year, right? Stuff's been off, right? And you made the comparison to the Patriots. Can you point to the quarterback for certain things? Yes. But, you know, I'm going to come back to this whole, like, if you post an average PFF grade, your stats can be anywhere, right? And Baker's had a bunch of years with average grades and stats really low throughout the year. Now, the ultimate final stat line was okay in this or whatever, but still, you know, 5.7 yards per attempt and just some stuff missing here with the Browns, offense. Nick Chubb continues to be
he's like the only part of the thing that functions.
Yeah.
Literally, if their entire offense was just running Nick Chubb every single play, they'd probably be like three wins better off.
I mean,
that's despite the fact that the running game isn't as impactful.
It's so funny because him and Kareem Hunt, again, like as a combo, are really dynamic. And when you put Odell Beckham and then Jarvis Landry, who's a nice complimentary player, and Odell Beckham is supposed to be a true number one, when you just look at it on paper, that should be really difficult to defend.
Mm-hmm.
Two dynamic running backs who they have used either interchangeably or at the same time, a couple good receivers, they should be difficult to defend. With Baker, usually an accurate quarterback who's regressed from an accuracy and decision-making standpoint. Not so much decision-making, but more accuracy and big-time throw standpoint this year.
And but even
they're just
so many,
not difficult to defend at all.
There's so many throws where it almost always seems to be the same throw as well. It's either a post or a dig, right? Where Baker thinks the receiver's doing something different to what they're actually doing.
Right.
Every single week, there's at least one of those where the ball is completely off. So, well, one of two things is happening here. Either the receiver is running a route that's different to what Baker's expecting, or he's missing the guy by 5 yards because he's like, it's bizarre.
Do they practice?
I don't know. But this was another one this week where there was a post in the end zone that was like 3 yards behind him. Like, that's not an accuracy thing. Like, quarterbacks in the NFL, regardless whether you're accurate or not, do not miss those throws by that amount. And Baker's doing that every single week. So for some reason, those guys have been completely unable to get on the same page, and those in particular, all year wrong.
I'll say it again. The passing game, there's so much precision. I'm amazed when things work. But when things don't work, it looks really, really ugly. And it's tough. Tough to watch right now. You doing a deep dive on OBJ this week?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Part of the problem. Big
OBJ,
part of the problem.
Part of the problem. The Browns just had a lot of problems throughout the season. We thought they might have an opportunity to finish strong. This is a big disappointment, I think, for them. And that ability to get some momentum heading into the offseason. Does momentum exist as far as heading into the offseason, or is that just doesn't exist within games?
Who knows?
Good job by Kyler bouncing back this week.
Yeah, took off scrambling.
And your boy Drake.
Drake. Dude, honestly, he is the perfect back for this offense because there are a few running backs that benefit more from being presented with more space than Kenyon Drake, right? He's fast. He's elusive. He's able to make people miss. He's a good part of the passing game. If you can get people out of the box and give him a general, give him lighter areas to run into, he'll make some real plays. So he had four touchdowns in this game, but he also had, you know, 146 yards and a ton of good plays where he was making people miss. At one point, put a move on Denzel Ward that just made him fall over and give Drake the corner. Like, he looked like a beast in this. And the Cardinals are in this interesting spot where they gave David Johnson a ton of money.
Right.
But they're getting to the point where they can get out from that, and suddenly you've got cheaper, arguably better version in this offense in Drake.
I think if you're a Cardinals fan, things were trending really well. Just like, hey, the Browns are going to finish the second half strong. Things were trending well in the second half. Kyler Murray's turning a corner. He's getting more comfortable. He had those two disastrous games against the Rams and the Steelers that I thought just brought way more question marks than you'd like. Other than those two games, though, it's like, all right, we're finding the pieces that are going to be a part of this going forward. Drake could be one of them. We got to figure out the offensive line. We got to add more playmakers to this, and the Cardinals should be, you know, set up to continue to improve. Those two black marks, though, still kind of, I don't know, don't love them for Kyler.
Mm.
This was a good bounce back, though.
This is also, we got to bear in mind, so as much as the Eagles, Carson Wentz struggles, how much of it is they literally don't have any receivers anymore. Like, the Cardinals still don't have any receivers.
No.
Like, Larry Fitzgerald is 125 years old, still going. He's still by far their best receiver. After that, they're just, like, rolling in bodies. Isabella, Trent Sherfield, Damian Bird, Farrell Cooper. Like, none of these guys right now have any business getting significant snaps for an NFL offense.
And if you look at all of the receivers that are available in the draft.
Christian Kirk as well, obviously.
But, I mean, if, like, the Cardinals, like, doubled up at receiver.
Again.
With their first two picks. Again.
Yeah.
Doubled up at receiver. I don't care. I'm all for that.
Well, particularly this year.
That's what I mean. This year, continue to just stock up on those playmakers and surround Kyler with various types of talent. I know they did with Hakeem Butler this year.
Right.
They got Andy Isabella and all that stuff. But
there's, I mean, the overall point is that this team still does not have quality receiving options yet, and yet they're still, you know, able to be reasonable for the most part on offense. When they actually get those receivers that can win independent of the system, they'll be, you know, in real business.
Say the same thing about Fitz that we said about some of the Patriots receivers. If he's a complimentary piece at this point in his career, that's nice.
Fitz would be the number one receiver in the Patriots still.
Yeah, not good. So good bounce back by the Cardinals and Kyler. Cowboys 44, the Rams 21. Just as the Rams started to turn the corner, man, they started to fool me. I think I saw Jeff Schwartz put this out there. This is the game that should get Jason Garrett fired. Counterintuitive take.
Hmm. Why?
Because this shows what the Cowboys are capable of, but they can't do it every week.
I see.
So he's the head coach that...
Somebody wanted to get him fired because of the coin toss fiasco.
Oh, we'll talk about that. That's 10 minutes in and of itself.
I love that became like a Jason Garrett thing, even though, like, if there's one thing in the world that the coach has almost zero control over, it's what happens when all the guys go out to the middle and make the coin toss.
It's like, still
beyond the instructions of this is what you do. Like, if the guy's incapable of relaying that message, I struggle to see how that's my fault.
It is a weird system with the NFL, right?
Yeah, because, everyone wants the ball in the second half now.
Which wasn't allowed until, like, 10 or 11 years ago.
So now that is allowed, that's all that anybody wants to do.
But
so there's almost no point in having the discussion. It's just, you won the toss, this is what you're doing.
So just so our listeners know, I think it's confusing, right? What winning the toss allows you to do, it allows you to choose when you want to choose.
Yeah.
Right? You get to choose if you want.
Right. You used to just be able to choose, do you want the ball? Then you could choose to defer.
Yeah, and you used to have to choose to take the ball.
That's what I mean.
Right. You used to have to, right? So winning the toss back in the day until 11 years ago actually just meant you get the ball in the first half. That's it, which makes no sense. Why even have a coin toss, right? You get the ball first. You win. You get the ball first. Mm. It's stupid. There was a time back in the day where somebody was like, I'd rather kick. I choose to kick, thinking they were going to get the ball in the second half. But the real thing that's happening is the team who doesn't get to choose in the first half gets to choose in the second half.
Yeah.
So if you choose to kick, then the team that received in the first half is going to be like, I want to receive in the second half. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with the Rams. Now, I blame the Madden video game for confusing a lot of people. Because in Madden, what you do, there's a coin flip, and you either say receive, kick, defend north, defend south, or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way the kids were taught, myself included, Xennials and younger, we were taught, you click kick. I choose to kick, therefore I'm going to receive in the second half. There are probably, I would guarantee you, there's probably 80% of NFL players think that's how it goes.
Uh-huh.
They think, well, I choose to kick, therefore I get to receive in the second half. When what you're really doing is you're telling, I defer the option to the other team, and the other team says, I choose to receive.
Yeah. It is like it's generally a stupid system. Like, is there even a scenario where it would ever come up that you actually want to do what Dallas initially looked like they had done?
Right. So just to finish the point, so Madden tells you to choose kick. That literally never happens in the NFL. If you ever choose kick, then you'll end up kicking twice.
Yeah.
Which is what Dallas did.
Right. No, they didn't, because they changed it at halftime.
Okay, and then they fixed
that was
it.
But the
that's
thing.
That was the big rumor about what happened.
Yes, that was what they were on the slate to do before New York got on the phone at halftime and when we've seen the audio of this, you might want to fix it. But like, there's literally never a scenario where you'd want to do that, right? Like, I was thinking about it yesterday, and like, is there ever a scenario where like defense or weather or where you actually just want to, you don't want the ball, you want to kick it away twice?
No.
No, never, right?
No.
At which point, why is it an option? Let's just have the coin toss to determine who gets the ball and when.
And then the other team gets the ball the other
time. And that's
time.
It. Done.
It would be
So sorry. The audio comes out, and it's like, so Dak had been, they comes out, and Dak is like, I told him defer. So he had been complaining that he actually told him to defer, and they thought he said kick, right? The audio comes out, and he did say defer at like the third time of asking, right? He said, something about kicking and something else. Like, it was like the third thing he said was, we defer. So the officials thought he'd said kick, even asked him twice to confirm it.
It is a stupid rule overall.
So then, but then they somehow, this is so amazingly NFL, that they somehow,
right.
In fixing it, somehow even made it worse. It's like, all right, the audio's come out, we can figure out what's going on. We need to make, because it would be insane if we ran with this. Let's make it so that Dallas get their way. And they actually defer in the second half. But they didn't tell anybody this until halftime. And this, the whole reason of this is you can sort of double up possessions, right? You score, you get the last one in the first half and then the first one in the second half.
Right.
It changes strategy. So McVay comes out thinking he's getting the ball in the second half. And they're like, no, it turns out we've given it to Dallas. Unlucky. It's like, how do you not tell people?
Yeah, I have no idea, man.
You're telling me that if New York is making this call, you're telling me they're unable to dial into the official sometime before halftime
and be like, we're going to flip it.
We're going to change this.
Dallas
this is ridiculous.
That they want to defer. Anyway, as far as the on-field stuff, we've been talking about the progression of the Rams offensive line. That has stalled.
Yeah.
7 pressures from Bobby Evans, 5 from Austin Blythe, 4 more from Austin Corbett, 4 from even Andrew Whitworth.
This was like early season Rams where it was 4 guys that were awful and Whitworth who was just meh.
Yeah. I mean, it was, that was on 59 pass blocking snaps, so there was a lot. But run blocking, we're going to see really bad grades across the board from that Rams offensive line, which means on the other side, good job by Dallas. I mean, we talked about last year in the playoff game, they got destroyed in the trenches. And sometimes this happens in sport, Sam. You get the team that gets destroyed last time, and for whatever reason, usually say they got a chip on their shoulder, right? Yeah, chip on their shoulder. There's a lot of chips on the collective shoulders of the Dallas defensive front because DeMarcus Lawrence got after it, Malik Collins, Michael Bennett, who wasn't there last year. He had no chips, but he still dominated with 8 pressures. So... just a dominant performance up front by the Dallas Cowboys. And then you've got Jared Goff, just doesn't see linebackers sometimes.
Yeah, all the time, in fact.
Yeah. Tight window throws in the secondary, just a lot of bad from the Rams offense, a lot of good from the Cowboys defense, and then the Cowboys offense capitalized with another game where Zeke was, you know, one of their, he was their guy for once this year.
I think this is a good, I like the thing you said right at the start. This shows what Dallas is capable of. I think it really does. This is why, as much as they might bumble their way into the playoffs and end up in there with a 500 record,
they're capable of this.
This is a team that can beat anybody in the NFC. Like, they were not that far away from beating the Minnesota Vikings. They can beat any of those teams. They're going to have to roll into Dallas in a postseason playoff game and try and knock them off.
Yeah, I mean, just trench battle won by the Cowboys. Ran for over 260 yards total. Mentioned all the defensive performances. When you get premium stats 2.0 and your grades come in, you're going to see awesome run block grades from Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins. All of the classic Cowboys good offensive linemen showed up to play. I mean, this was, other than Dak having a bit of an uneven game, this was Cowboys football. Tavon Austin, you know, generation, they're doing all sorts of stuff.
100-yard games for both Zeke and Tony Pollard.
Yeah.
Pollard had 131 and 12 carries.
Jason Witten was even catching passes.
Dude, one-handed snag? Yeah. That's like the best catch he's made in like a decade.
Man, the year of the slow tight end. Still averaging 9 yards a catch, but, you know, in this game. So, dominant performance by the Dallas Cowboys. Remember they did this last year to the Jaguars and the people thought that the Jags were good? Dallas just always seems to have these games in them. And I said this on the pod, too. Right when you're ready to... Right when the Dallas fans are ready to fire Jason Garrett.
They're like the Marcus Mariota of teams.
They are.
Right when you're about to pull them, that's when they show up.
So the other maddening performance, maybe for a fan base, Atlanta Falcons 29, San Francisco 49ers 22. If you're a Falcons fan, you're like, can you sneak me in closer to Chase Young here? Like, could you get it? Get me a Chase Young. Get me a nice top draft.
These games must be the most irritating thing for fan bases, where it's like, we suck this year. And then you show up and beat arguably the best team in the NFL, who's, and the only purpose of this game is to take us further down the draft.
This is the second time in 6 weeks that they've beaten one of the best teams in the NFL. They beat the Saints. You know, they lost to the Saints, too, but they beat them 26-9 back in week 10. They beat the 49ers now 29-22. And if you're a Falcons fan, you're either like, here's a 10-win team. We should have been a 10-win team. This is ridiculous. We should be in the playoff hunt. Or you're like, look, if you're going to be bad, just win three.
Right.
So we can
just put us at the top of the draft and let us move on.
But I think this is why, if Dan Quinn does not survive at the end of the season, our friend Mike McCarthy, who is in full write-up from Peter King, Monday Morning Quarterback, may have let it out of the bag that Mike was lurking around the offices here during the offseason. Whoever it is, all these guys looking for offseason coaching jobs, I think would love to land in Atlanta. You make a few tweaks on the O-line. You got the playmakers in place. You add a few playmakers on the back end defensively. Grady Jarrett's playing like a superstar, and you've got some stuff to build around.
This game also featured one of the best plays in the NFL in George Kittle's block.
Did you see that?
The touchdown where he just took a guy 10 yards into the end zone, buried him whilst giggling.
Yeah, he loved that.
Now, to be fair, it was the smallest player on defense. Like, it was a player that weighs the same as me.
It was also, answer me this question, too, since you were a former second team IAFL player.
That's right.
He's in man coverage there, right?
Yeah.
You know, so George Kittle's going to block a guy in man coverage. And I know you've got run responsibilities still when you're in man coverage, but you're just, his focus is like, I got to cover George Kittle. We're on the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like what I always say about Lamar kind of like makes his offensive line better because there's so much trickeration that the blocker's got to find where the ball is. And before you know it, you're getting blocked. There's a little bit of that too, right? That takes a little of the luster away. It's not like this dude's trying to really defeat a block by George Kittle. He's like, hey, I'm going to play some man coverage. Oh, look, it's a run play. I'm getting blocked. There's a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly initially he's looking to shadow him, and then by the time he realizes that actually this guy's coming right at me to block me, it's probably too late to do anything about it.
He's in
particularly when you're outweighed by like 60 pounds.
Tight end Twitter was probably loving it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Over it. Tight end Twitter.
Hashtag finish.
So, anyway, pretty impressive finish by the Falcons. Nice drive by Matt Ryan to get them down there. I thought, you know,
this was a real disaster for the 49ers, right? Because this
huge
was
swing.
This a team that's like dominating the number one seed all season long. This game took them from the number one seed to the number five seed. Like, they are now a wild card spot. now they can get it back. But this is a team that's gone from controlling everything to looking like looking in from the outside.
And you're looking at the schedule here. Here's a 4-win Atlanta team.
And we've been, you know, the NFC is, it's cutthroat. It's brutal. So we said like a couple of weeks ago, this was huge. The 49ers beat the Saints, wrested control of the NFC away from them. Now everything has to go through Santa Clara, where they are. Now it doesn't.
San Francisco still.
Whatever.
I would say so.
It's got to go through the Bay Area somewhere.
Yeah. Rick would know.
Now it doesn't. Now it might have to go through Seattle.
Yeah.
Or Green Bay. Or, like, it could go various places. The point is, you got to go on the road now in a way you didn't before.
Yeah, it's really huge. There was a quote, Kyle Shanahan was saying, hey, this is their Super Bowl. It needs to be our Super Bowl. It is tough, right? Because the... when you're the top seed and you got the Falcons not playing for anything, like they're going to play this, but it's a road game. Like you should just handle.
So this,
business.
This to me is the argument to reseed the playoffs, not the fact that you have a crappy, semi-crappy team hosting a playoff game. I don't really care about that. But the idea that the 49ers have gone from every single game will be at home until the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right. To you now don't get a home game.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty crazy in the space of one loss.
But, you know, as they say in college football, it makes the regular season matter. It means you just got to take care of business. You have every game, a week 15 game, which looks like a dud on the schedule, 4-win Falcons against the number one seed Niners matters.
Yes, but it's conceivable that this team could end the season with the second best record in the NFL and not host a single playoff game.
I understand.
And 1 win would be the difference. Like, that's crazy. That, to me, is a way stronger argument than, hey, this team that's only got a 500 record is hosting a playoff game. This is wrong and obnoxious.
As we used to say in the minors, if you don't like it, play better.
Yeah.
Play.
How did that work out for you in the minors?
I didn't play well enough.
Huh.
So when I complained that my towels weren't plush enough and I was only making $20 of meal money per day and I made 10 grand a year and all that stuff, when I complained about that stuff,
you just got worse.
I mean, I played better, but not well enough.
Oh. Okay.
If you want to go from $2,000 a month salary to $2,000 a day,
yeah,
you just got to play better. They'll call you up, and that's your salary jump.
Huh?
It's pretty solid. Minimum
wage. You should have done that.
I should have.
Yeah.
I tried hard. I wasn't that good though. So there you go. And let's wrap it up.
What do we got?
This was supposed to be the Sunday night game. Is this what got flexed?
I guess.
Is this why it's in our schedule like this? Minnesota Vikings 39, Chargers 10.
Not a trap game, apparently.
Can I make one more?
It's got out of control quickly.
My other fantasy team had the Vikings defense. Ah, don't kick me. Like 17 fumble recoveries and picks. And my favorite when they're like, it's third and long here. Phillip Rivers, you don't want to make one of those bad decisions. You don't want to just throw one up for grabs. He threw it, and that's an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Phillip.
Yeah, not good from Phillip. Particularly as early in the game, like this was close. For a reasonable period of time. Yep. Phillip Rivers was kind of carving up that Vikings defense for a period.
He had some nice drives.
Like Xavier Rhodes again spent like 3 minutes before he had to go off limping, which seems to have happened basically every game in the last 3 years.
He's really trying to battle through everything, all his injuries.
Like at some point, you're just done, right? Like you can't, or at least take some time, right? Don't just keep every game. It seems that he goes off hobbling at some point.
He played only 14 snaps yesterday.
Yeah. He has not played every snap of a game since week two. And that, I honestly, it feels like the year, last year and the year before was the same story as well. I'd be curious how many of those games he's played a full 100% slate. And it really isn't many. I think there was only one game last year and it was two games and they were week one and two. So Xavier Rhodes might just need like a few weeks to sit himself down and get ready. Like maybe you shut him down till the playoffs. Because honestly, the dude just needs to get healthy because this whole thing of, let's go out there, get torched, and then be hurt.
That might be the move.
It's not helping.
Right. Dalvin Cook also banged up.
Down.
That looked pretty serious.
So it was interesting
Mike
because
Boone looked really nice.
Madison didn't go. Like, he was already shut down heading into the game.
Right.
Mike Boone comes in. He's done really well in the preseason and looked really good. So this system is, to an extent, running back proof. Like, as much as Dalvin Cook has been making a ton of his own yardage, just the way they're blocking. And it's not, you know, it's not that the offensive line is incredible, but this system, scheme, plays being called is to an extent running back group.
I just think it gives you a little bit more space to work with. And it gives credit. you know, they say you need a running back who's decisive and makes one cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not that hard to do.
There's also a degree to which Mike Boone might actually be quite a good player. Like,
I know.
This season, he's looked good.
Oh, he's always looked good. I'm just saying, we've been talking about this scheme, the Kubiak, you know, from Shanahan scheme, as foolproof for running backs since the 90s.
Mm.
Look at Terrell Davis comes out of nowhere, and then he gets hurt, and Alandis Gary, and then Mike Anderson. All these guys are 1,000-yard rushers back then. And then, you know, Warrick Dunn with the Falcons. I mean, this has been a thing. If you dedicate your life to running outside zone, you can extract rushing production out of running backs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still love Dalvin Cook. I still think he's special and awesome and all that stuff. But even the best running back has a certain amount of interchangeability to them. And we saw a little bit more of that with Mike Boone, the way he ran the ball extremely well yesterday. So, again, I think the Vikings, I think, are showing that they can win games in different ways.
This is a big game for them. I thought there was a genuine chance that they would struggle in this game and it would be something of a trap game for them. And early it looked like it could be. They got ahead, and then I think they surrendered the lead and it started to look iffy, and then they just went right the hell away.
I love looking at our passing breakdown, and it's usually no pressure, under pressure, no blitz, blitz. Kirk Cousins is missing a line, and that's because the Chargers did not blitz.
Yeah, at all.
No blitzes. 19 of 25 for 207 against the no blitz,
mm-hmm.
which was the Chargers. Still running that basic, you know, old school, 5 years ago, cover three defense, which is fine. But that's just what they did. So I think the Vikings, big game for them. I think they just they can win with pass rush, with coverage, with the run game, with Cousins doing some things. I mean, I think really nice. Cousins threw the ball well again.
By the way, in addition to so backing up my idea that they might want to shut Xavier Rhodes down.
Yep.
Holden Hill might be a better option at this point.
Yeah.
He's also, you know, one quick test away from being out of the league.
So go use him.
Well, that too. But like, he had to come in for when Rhodes went down. Like, he played okay. He played reasonable. Like, he honestly might be a better option right now starting outside than Xavier Rhodes.
Yeah, and as great as I love Zimmer-led defenses and what they're capable of and all that stuff, there have been some disastrous performances in the secondary over the last couple of years. That's one of those things. I think a lot of times the weaknesses show up in the playoffs. The Vikings have to shore that up.
At some point, Mike Hughes found himself in a jump ball situation with Mike Williams. That's what, like 6 inches of height difference?
Yeah.
Seven, maybe? That didn't go well.
Mike Williams has made a few beast mode plays out there, which makes YOLO Phillip Rivers dangerous in any given week, just not this week.
Yeah.
YOLOs went the wrong way.
I mean, yeah. Early, it looked like it might, and then really didn't.
It's tough to predict games when you just really don't know when Rivers is going to start doing that, because he did it in week 10, in week 11, then he was good for a couple weeks, then he did it in week 15. You just don't know when he's just going to start chucking it up for grabs and be a top five turnover worthy play guy like he has been this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? All in a cool 2 hours.
Yep. We're done.
We did it.
Let's get out.
That's it. Week 15 is over, other than Monday Night Football. Colts at the Saints. Check it out. It'll be fun. It looks like Saints home in a dome and expecting
win.
Top performance for them. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be on later in the week, Thursday.
Yeah.
We'll be back for our week 16 preview. Enjoy your week. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now
at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.